Free Talk Live.
It's Free Talk Live. It's talk radio that you control. And 603-283-6160 is the phone number here. That number is 603-283-6160. You can call in with whatever is on your mind. You can talk about what we're talking about, or later on maybe change the topic, because we do have a caller already on the line who is going to talk with us about a very specific topic. Roger Ver, Bitcoin Jesus, was arrested in Spain by the United States Empire yesterday, and we just need to talk about what we know so far. I've started reading the indictment, but with you in the studio on Free Talk Live tonight, you've got me, Bonnie,
Lori,
and Chris.
And here on the phone with us via Jitsi, give me a second, we have Aaron Day with us. How are you doing today, Aaron?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing really well, except, I mean, that news made me very sad. I know exactly what they're doing. They're going after him for politically motivated reasons and harming him. I think it's because he just came out with a book about the CIA's involvement in Bitcoin. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think the timing of it is very suspicious. I actually just had Roger on my podcast a couple of weeks ago to talk about his book.
Wow.
And the book, the whole theme of the book is basically how Bitcoin was hijacked by a very specific group of people. And he provides irrefutable proof. Hmm. The book is just filled with facts. In fact, I've known Roger since 2012. And I was expecting, based on how Roger was personally treated by the BTC community, that there would be a lot of personal anecdotes in here, and it would be a lot of him kind of venting. And there was actually none of that. The book is all factual, and he actually uses, you know, the Bitcoin core developers' quotes directly. He's mostly quoting other people, not making opinions himself. And it's a very, very damning book for the people that are responsible for taking what was supposed to be peer-to-peer digital cash for the entire world and turning it into an elite asset class that at the same time makes it easy to roll out CBDCs.
Hmm. I definitely think that this arrest and the arrests of tons of people related to cryptocurrency, Mark Risen, I think his name is, and Ian Freeman, my husband and the founder of this show we're on, and now Roger Ver, I definitely think these are related to the fact that the government wants to roll out CBDCs. And CBDCs are central bank digital currencies, and they would make it to where basically we have no freedom ever again to transact in a way that the government doesn't know exactly what you've done.
Well, yeah, they need a monopoly on it.
Yeah.
Cash is the last step. They have to do away with cash.
Hmm. And they've been making little steps towards that, I think.
So I wrote a book about this, and actually ran for the last time I was on Free Talk Live, I was running for president in the Republican primary, specifically to bring awareness to this central bank digital currency issue. And that was over a year ago. And at that time, what I was suggesting is that the government has a two-pronged approach. One, they want to crack down on decentralized crypto and while simultaneously developing central bank digital currencies. This is not a conspiracy theory. It's actually Executive Order 14067 that President Biden signed on March the 9th, 2022. So this executive order actually states we will use a whole of government approach. So, I mean, the reason that there were five federal departments raiding Ian and raiding the Crypto Six, that's a whole of government approach. But you see that just in the past week, you've seen it's a lockstep. It's the FBI saying, hey, if you bought crypto from an unlicensed money transmitting service and your crypto is pooled, we can come back and claw back your crypto.
Oh,
you have the IRS say, you have the IRS saying, we're going to change the 1099 forms. You now have to report self-custody crypto.
And
they are. Yeah.
Another thing that seems to be a change and that's new that I noticed when I was reading the indictment was that they use the exact language that was just being argued about in Ian's case. So what they're doing is they're building upon each of these cases to change the definitions of things to prosecute the next person. In Ian's case, they kept arguing that the prosecution would say, oh, Bitcoin wallet addresses are analogous to bank account numbers. And then Sisti, Ian's lawyer, would be like, no, that's not the same thing. A wallet in your pocket is not the same thing as a bank address number, is it? I mean, a bank account number, is it? And then they were like arguing back and forth. But since Ian was found guilty, they just get to say everything the prosecution says is truth now.
Well, for a while, they were saying that, oh, that's not money. That's not anything crypto. So when did they decide that it was money? Was it before Roger left?
I think that it was literally during Ian's trial because they just basically, that was a huge argument that, well, not just a huge argument. Aria DeMezzo's lawyer put in a motion to dismiss the whole case based on the fact that Bitcoin's not money and that these laws that they were being prosecuted with, the Patriot Act, were created in 2001, like 10 years or almost 10 years before Bitcoin was invented at all. So it couldn't possibly like fall under that definition. And the judge just said, no, I think the definition of money seems to cover the word or the like what Bitcoin is. So therefore, we're just gonna
move
on.
Roll with it.
Yeah.
It fits what we want it to fit. So that's what we're going to do.
Right. Yeah. So and I just think it's relevant to this case with Roger Ver because they just, you know, keep piling on different new definitions of things and making precedent here and there. And then they just go after you. They really can just like rewrite history and, you know, reality by just changing definitions like that.
You're kidding. Well, the federal government does this. Yeah. They just change the conversation, just make up new laws and new words to mean what they want to do.
Yeah.
Say it ain't so.
They make it impossible to really comply. Like, as we'll see with this Roger Ver indictment, he hired a law firm to tell him what the right thing to do was. And, well, they say that the lawyers advised him incorrectly. So, therefore, he needs to be indicted by the DOJ. And it's just like, you can't comply hard enough for these people.
You can't. It cannot be done. You cannot come up with an argument that says I have followed everything and the federal government cannot touch me.
Well, that's because they change the rules.
Right. They do this. Yeah. And it's nothing new. It happens every day. And they've been doing it for years. And the only thing they've done is ramped it up specifically towards crypto.
Yeah, they have.
But it's not going to stop until something happens.
The worst thing about it is that Bitcoin was not created by any kind of government, like issued by a government or anything like that. It was just created by a person, and it has nothing to do with any one government or state or anything. And I think that it's something that they should just realize they have no business in. But of course, they are not going to do that because it threatens their security as an empire.
So from what I can tell, all of this coordinated crackdown on pro-liberty crypto started in 2017. 2017 was essentially when Bitcoin was hijacked, as per Roger's book. I'm interviewing a guy tomorrow named Steven Nerioff, who was actually one of the first people involved with Ethereum. He actually did the legal documents for Ethereum. It's a really long story. You should check out the interview. But in essence, he described to the people that were starting Ethereum that what they were doing was illegal, and he didn't want to have any part of it. And when he left to silence him, because there was actually allegedly some collusion between Ethereum and the SEC, the DOJ came in, swept him up, threw him in a van, handcuffed him, threatened him with a lawsuit for extortion, and said he'd never see his children again unless he ratted out pro-crypto leaders in the crypto community. This is 2017. And so far I know of two names, and this is actually the focus of what I'm going to talk about tomorrow, Naomi Brockwell and Patrick Byrne. But I suspect that there are others. I know there are others. I just won't find out until tomorrow who they are. So the DOJ has been using extortion against people since 2017 to specifically get names of people in the Liberty community that are leaders in crypto. So and I think it's important people need to understand that.
What is the thing you're saying about Naomi Brockwell there?
She was one of the ones that the DOJ was targeting. So this guy, Steven Nurioff, when he was handcuffed and, you know, when the DOJ kind of went after him looking for names and, or excuse me, not looking for names, looking for information, Naomi Brockwell was one of the people on the list. And what that says to me is I suspect that's going to mean it's also Jeremy Kaufman. I wouldn't be surprised if Eric Voorhees and Roger and others are on there. The point is that the DOJ, like, the, you know, the fact that Ian was selected, the fact that Jeremy was selected, these are not coincidences. The fact that it's all of our friends that are having their businesses destroyed and being thrown in jail and not anybody else's friends, what is the commonality? And the commonality is free trade and free speech. And so the DOJ has been pushing this. Now it's an executive order. So now it's out in the open. But the new twist on it is that this has actually been going on since 2017.
And what was that executive order again?
Executive Order 14067, and it was signed on March the 9th, 2022, and it does two things. It authorizes the U.S. government to explore a central bank digital currency, and it authorizes a whole-of-government approach to regulating all digital assets.
Wow.
So this has been in play, funded full, and they certainly have been very full steam. So what we're seeing right now is actually government policy, and it's actually out in the open. They don't even hide it anymore. The part that is that most people don't know, and I found this even in the crypto community, is people, there's a missing piece between Roger's book and what's going on with CBDCs. And that missing link is this: when Bitcoin was hijacked, you know, in 2017, people were using Bitcoin to buy things directly through sites like Overstock and Expedia and everything else. And then all of a sudden it was slow and it was expensive and people didn't want to use it. And there was a choice, which was to increase the number of transactions per second by increasing the size of what are called blocks, which was how it was supposed to work, or, which is what they did, keep the block small, keep it intentionally slow and expensive, and built this experiment on top called Lightning Network. So they just cut off all of the adoption. Here's the interesting twist. The group that funded the development of SegWit and Lightning, which is what kept Bitcoin slow, was the MIT group. That same group funded all three US CBDC pilots. It's literally the same guy, Joy Ito, involved with the funding of all of these things. And no one talks about this.
In MIT, you mean like the college?
Yes, the college, the MIT, they have a digital currency initiative. This is all funded out through their MIT multimedia lab. And this MIT group has been involved in all three US CBDC pilots. Interestingly enough as well, one of the developers that worked on Lightning Network and SegWit is a co-author of the US CBDC white paper.
Wow.
His name is
Corey Fields. Mm-hmm. You can look all of this up. Like, this is even on their website, Project Hamilton website. They have the information up. You can Google it. You can see his name. You can Google Corey Fields, and you can Google Joy Ito, and you will see that Joy Ito, in addition to running the MIT lab that funded this, he ran something called Digital Garage, which was a venture capital firm. They invested in Blockstream, which is the group that is now funding Bitcoin Core developers. And it's also the group that's business model. They make money selling what are called layer two solutions to solve the problem of slow and expensive L1 on Bitcoin. So same guys, venture arm is funding Blockstream. And he's also funding SegWit, and he's also funding Lightning. The next step is, and this is Jeffrey Epstein funded Joy Ito.
Well, that's interesting.
So it literally gets worse. So all of the, and in fact, Jeffrey Epstein, you can Google Jeffrey Epstein. There's an article. He's only done one interview about this. In 2017, Jeffrey Epstein did an article, an interview about Bitcoin, where he said he didn't think Bitcoin was meant to be a currency. He didn't think it was meant to be used for transactions. He thought it was meant to be digital gold. Exactly.
How can you say it was meant to be anything other than peer-to-peer cash when that's what the white paper says?
Well, you can say it if you're funding the guy that's hobbling Bitcoin while also funding the CBDCs.
Hmm.
So you lay out 2017 as the start of this. I mean, what about the arrests that occurred well before 2017? You know, you had Charlie Schramm going down in, what, 2013, 2014? You had U.S. government agencies poking into all kinds of crypto stuff, early crypto stuff. I don't want to, I certainly don't want to belittle anything, because this stuff is important. And you are right, for all the right reasons, that this is critical, that we have to have control of our money, and we need to do that. But I don't want people to get the impression that, you know, suddenly in 2017, they started going after crypto. They had been going after crypto, I think, since Gavin Andreessen went and talked to the CIA, which is early stuff.
Well, to be clear, the government was going to go after it on the government has been going after it on day one, just as they had done all cryptocurrencies prior to Bitcoin, the Liberty Dollar,
sure,
and everything else that existed before Bitcoin. So I'm not saying that they ignored crypto until 2017. What I'm saying is there was a coordinated effort specifically to target pro-liberty leaders in crypto, specifically for the purpose of shutting it down to bring out central bank digital currencies. That is the arc that's different. But yeah, no, certainly they were going after everyone as they normally had in the past, but the strategy became more of how do we shut this thing down so that we can specifically at one moment in time roll out CBDC. And that's why what you're seeing right now is going on with at such an aggressive pace, because I haven't talked about what the results were of those CBDC pilots. The CBDC pilot that they did in the United States, but it was between the Federal Reserve Bank of New York and the MIT group. This pilot can do 1.8 million transactions per second. So to put this in perspective, BTC does 7 transactions per second.
Mm-hmm.
So this pilot, which was completed in 2022, can do an order of magnitude more transactions than the current traditional financial system. And the part that's public is they say, well, we have a few technical details to work out, but that the main next steps are related to legality and marketing. Now, I've talked to one dev who actually worked on the project, and I'm talking to somebody else who knows somebody that's currently working on this. They have surpassed what they have published. So whenever you Google Project Hamilton, understand you're seeing what they published 2 years ago. They are well beyond what was published. And so there's something important to note about what's going on with this. So it's not only will Project Hamilton replace cash and replace the existing system as we know it, it will work with another CBDC pilot called Regulated Liability Network, RLN. And what this is one ledger that will track all CBDCs and all other digital assets. So what this means is whether you have an existing decentralized crypto or what everybody's talking now is popular, a real world asset. So people start tokenizing their homes and cars and everything else. All of that will be required to be registered and KYC'd and tracked on the same ledger as CBDC.
It just, it's definitely a really bad thing. I really think that there is evidence of them trying to get rid of cash, like you were saying, that would be the next thing, just because during COVID-19, they were like, there's a cash shortage. How? Because vending machines aren't being used right now. I don't believe that at all. Like, I remember I worked at the Mighty Moose Mart, and you guys asked me to go get like quarters or something from the bank, and the bank told me that they didn't have quarters right at that time. During like 2021.
Just ran out of quarters.
Yeah. I don't believe it. I don't believe it at all, because it's like people aren't using vending machines right now. I remember that being one of the explanations.
The thought of having all of your money and assets tracked and recorded and controlled by the government is terrifying.
It oh,
is.
No. No, we should be embracing this. That way we will be safe.
Mm.
You know, it's really from about who? Safety.
Aren't from, they the ones that I we mean, need half to be
what,
safe from?
Half of what they're doing is all they're using under the guise of terrorism.
Yeah.
If we you know, live we like have... the Chinese, then we can be safe from the Chinese.
Exactly.
No, to me, CBDCs are the biggest single threat to human liberty. This is why yeah. I'm doing what I'm doing. I've literally dropped everything that I'm doing. Once I realized, and part of what motivated this was what was going on with Ian. When I started researching what was going on with Ian, I'm like, why are they putting this much effort into it? I mean, literally.
Right.
And when I researched that and when I found out what was going on with CBDCs, it clicked. And so people need to understand. I actually think I'm calling it DEFCON 1 now. I think that we're within 6 months of having a CBDC implemented for a whole variety of reasons. Wow. And so like this, we need to be all on board with stopping this.
I agree. And I do believe that this at this point in time, trust in the U.S. government by citizens is at an all-time low. That's
left, as it should be.
As it should be.
As
and
should be.
I really do think that that's a trend. I mean, we see it on the left. We see it on the right. And I don't think too many people are going to be absolutely okay with every single transaction. It was wow. okay when it was just like, you know, if you're sending more than $10,000, I mean, we need to know where that goes. And most people accepted that. They you know, we don't want terrorists to, we don't want people laundering money and sending that money to Al-Qaeda or something like that.
And plus, if you disagreed with it, you're just unpatriotic.
Well, I know, but I think fewer and fewer people are going to buy that.
I kind of disagree.
I
think that the fact that everyone's suckling off the government teat, you know, we won't give you your Social Security. Won't give you your disability. We won't give you your food stamps. We won't give you your housing vouchers. We won't give you this and that if you don't accept this.
Well, all those systems will be paid through a CBDC.
That's right. And those people won't fight back against it because they're so in the system that they can't in their minds.
I've got some bad news. One, I think they will accept it predominantly because it will be brought about in an emergency. That's like how we got the Patriot Act, TARP, CARES, everything else. But two, the banks already actually track all of this. I actually spent some time. I took the terms of service for the four largest banks, JP Morgan Chase, Wells Fargo, Bank of America, and Citigroup. And I examined those contracts and looked at the terms. And here's what I found. They can cancel your account for any reason.
Yes.
I guess, maybe we'll get to this.
Yep. We can do that. 603. Right. Well, the number is 603-283-6160. We're going to be discussing more about the arrest of Roger Ver and our CBDCs coming in 6 months. More coming up on Free Talk Live.
This hour of Free Talk Live is brought to you by Dash, digital cash. Dash is the cryptocurrency designed to be used for spending. Rising fees have made Bitcoin useless for purchases, but Dash continues to have fees less than 1 cent per transaction, and its features ensure Dash is undefeated as the most useful cryptocurrency in the marketplace. From a technical standpoint, Dash transactions are irreversible, and its network is protected from 51% attacks by their Chainlocks technology. There's no need to wait for a confirmation before considering a Dash transaction complete, so it's great for merchants. Dash is one of the oldest cryptocurrencies and is widely available on exchanges, including the decentralized Maya protocol, and in multi-crypto wallets. It's easy to get and use Dash. Start by learning more at Dash.org. Big thanks to the Dash DAO for sending us 32 Dash per month to promote Dash on the air. Visit Dash.org to learn about Dash. Dash.org.
It's Free Talk Live. It's talk radio that you control, and 603-283-6160 is the phone number here. That's 603 283-6160. And Free Talk Live is brought to you by Dash, Digital Cash. Dash is the cryptocurrency made for spending. You can pay your bills with Dash at spritz.finance. Plus, they can send dollars to your bank if you still need those for something. Thanks to the Dash DAO for sending us 32 Dash per month for this sponsorship. It's easy to get and use Dash. You can learn more at dash.org. That's dash.org. And with you on Free Talk Live tonight in the studio, you've got me, Bonnie,
Lori,
and Chris.
And we're talking with Aaron Day. What's your, go ahead and give us like your website where people can find out more about you, Aaron Day.
I'm at day2024.com, which was my old presidential campaign site, but I've repurposed it. So you can see all the interviews that I've done on CBDCs. You can buy my book, The Final Countdown. And now I'm doing 4-hour workshops across the country. My next one is in San Jose, California on May the 11th. I'm basically teaching people about what's going on with CBDCs, the failure of fiat, and then I'm actually onboarding people to crypto, gold, and silver. So at the end of these workshops, people will have a self-custody crypto wallet. They will have a gold back, which is one one-thousandth of an ounce of gold, and they will have a 1/5 ounce round of silver. So I'm trying to just empower people to start using these alternative assets all over the country.
It's interesting. We accept gold backs at the Mighty Moose Mart, and right now we're down to almost none because people keep buying them as fast as we get them in because somebody is wanting to pay with gold backs. Now people are, do you got any gold backs in? Do you have, how many do you have? Can you give me 5? It's like, I love that.
Nice. Yes. I love gold backs. They're basically the easiest way to spend gold, with what's it called? It's very, small breaking. It's broken.
Fractional.
Yeah. It's very small fractions. That way you can spend it like cash instead of walking around with a gold bar that's worth $1,000 or whatever.
So get this. They've actually created gold back ATMs. So you're going to be able to actually buy gold backs with either fiat or crypto, I believe they're working on as well. So that, I think, is a game changer. So to me, actually, this is the only way we beat CBDCs. I've been around politics for 30 years. We will not vote our way out of this. The only way out of this is, in fact, there's also a controlled demolition of the banking system going on right now because they know they have CBDCs ready to save the day when everything collapses. So the only thing we can do is collapse it first and get people using an alternative so that when everything is in a catastrophic state, we can say, hey, you don't have to take CBDCs. You can use crypto, gold, and silver. Instead, you can opt out of tyranny. And I think that's the best way forward, at least. But it's, you know, the odds are against us, but it's still possible.
I think that people really do need to start to understand that if they don't have control over their money or privacy with their money, then they really just don't have freedom, because your money is little representations of your energy that you expend when you work and what you use to gain things for yourself and your family. And if the government can look at every single thing you're doing with it, you are not free. If the government can stop you from having access to it at the click of a button, you're just not free, even if it's one of your dollars. But if it's all of your dollars, then you're 100% a slave.
Yeah, one of the most damaging things that I see people say on a regular basis is, well, if you're not hiding anything.
Yeah.
Why do you care if you're not hiding anything, if you're not doing anything wrong?
Yeah. Well, the thing about that is they will use such innocent things to go after people. Like Chris Way has always given me the example of someone who bought a hammer at some store, and then a murder was conducted in that area, and they used all the records of everybody that bought a hammer in a certain amount of months.
Sure.
Which should be like totally illegal, Fourth Amendment violation, but they do things like that. And, you know, they're just going after everyone. You know, they just put people in jail until they can figure out how they can make it look like they did a crime, like instead of actually putting someone in jail because they found out that they did a crime and proved it.
Right. Yeah, they make the evidence fit their hypothesis of what happened instead of figuring out what happened from the evidence.
When I was visiting Ian the other day, when we were all walking out, I was overhearing conversations with the other visitors, and I heard a conversation with a couple of them, and they were saying, oh yeah, well, you know, with the feds, you're not going to win once they go up against you. They make they make the, you got to plea because otherwise they you just got to plea for something less bad to happen.
Right.
And it's like the public, I wouldn't say the public knows that because those people visiting there have their had their lives impacted by it. So they're probably more educated about the federal government going after people like Roger Ver and Ian Freeman.
Right.
These people know more about it because it impacts them personally. But yeah, it's just so obvious that when they go after you, they'll, like you said, make the facts, quote unquote, mold it to their points and then get you in jail for whatever reason, because you can't possibly comply to all the rules and laws that they have written down. They'll look at something you have, quote unquote, violated. They'll look for something because there's too many hundreds of thousands of laws for you to have not violated something. And as far as the Roger Ver thing, one thing that keeps coming to mind, friend of ours, Russell Canning, who's a Free Stater, a longtime activist here, he used to be an accountant like years and years ago. And he said that they would play a game in his office where him and all the other people would ask, call the IRS, that there's like some hotline for accountants. All of them would ask the IRS the same exact question, and they'd all get different answers.
Of course.
Like, what are we supposed to calculate this for, blah, 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 from what, blah, blah, you know? And then they'd be like, so what you got to do is this. And every IRS agent who's supposed to know the answer gave everybody different answers. Because it's just like, they basically just want you to fill out the paperwork, and they'll leave you alone. But then if they ever need a quick, easy way to go after you later, they'll say, oh, well, you did this thing wrong, like they're doing to Roger Ver, it seems like.
How many pages is the U.S. tax code now? Last I heard was like 88,000 pages.
I don't know.
I don't know either.
Sounds about right or more.
Not one single person can know everything in that. That's...
Of course not.
Absurd.
So, Aaron, have you
by design.
Have you read the indictment to Roger Ver yet?
I have. I want to jump back to one thing earlier, because okay. There's a question about whether Americans would accept a CBDC. So I looked at the terms of service of all of the major banks, and here's the thing. They can shut down your bank account. They can change the fees at any time. They can restrict the access to your funds. They can sell and or share your data without your consent, and they can change the agreement at any time without your consent. The money that you have in the bank today currently doesn't belong to you, and it is currently being surveilled. It was just announced last week that the IRS is literally giving, or the banks are literally giving the IRS people's banking information for the purpose of using AI for tax purposes. So we actually have no, we have no privacy right now as it stands. The only difference for a CBDC is that it makes the money programmable, so it's even worse. So for instance, they can just outright state, you can only use this money to buy these things right out of the gates. And it's, you know, immediately censorable, and it can be tied into things like social credit systems and everything else. And so there's an illusion here that, and now, do most people know this? No, most people do not know this, but certainly we are already being surveilled. The only difference between where we are right now is to what degree the money can be programmed. So that's...
Yeah, I get that. And I think you bring up a good point. It's bad now. It's horrible now. It's my first reaction to the early talks about CBDC. I'm like, wow, they're going to track every transaction. They do that now, unless you're paying with cash. If you're using a bank, if you're using a card, it's all being tracked. They know everything already. And the government's just going to keep going to the big banks and saying, we need a little bit more. And they're going to say, well, you know, if you're not going to find me, okay, I don't care. But it is horrible. And it's going to get worse. We know this. I just want one quote I want to throw out there. Privacy is necessary for an open society in an electronic age.
And
Eric Hughes, the Cypherpunk's Manifesto in, what, 1992 or 91 or something like that. That is a simple truth, and it hasn't changed. It's become more important for people to understand that simple sentence and understand what we risk. It's not losing, you know, something to the government. You're losing the ability to have an open society. Every aspect of it goes away when we turn over our privacy. And I don't know why. Go ahead.
Yeah, we're losing our free will. I mean, at this point, it's actually that severe because once we get to this level of tracking and once you add social credit scores, we literally don't have any the ability to make decisions, which I think is a fundamental component of the nature of consciousness and you know what life is all about. So to me, this is the battle here is that big. And I want to say, so I've been living off of crypto since 2019. I exited fiat completely, and it's gotten more difficult, obviously, with, you know, different coins going away, exchanges going away. I mean, even, you know, certain places that used to take crypto don't take it anymore. But it's important to point out that even with crypto, with Bitcoin, I mean, it is an open ledger. There are things that you can do to try to remain private, although those last week are starting to be shut down. Things like coin mixing are being shut down. So we don't necessarily have privacy with Bitcoin and Bitcoin related products. Things like Monero and Zcash and others are a great way to go. But I have to stress, I want people to think about it this way. When we get that next emergency, which by the way, when I'm online, I'm like, it could be any day now. Is it going to be a cyber attack? Is it going to be Israel, you know, Iran? Is it going to be Russia, Ukraine? Is it going to be China, Taiwan? Is it going to be a Kent State type event going on a elite university? It could be any of those things at any point. And so when that happens, they will be able to bring this in with bipartisan support using fear. And the only way we fight back is by not participating, but we have to be able to, when they roll out CBDCs, it's not useful if a couple dozen of our friends have Monero or some of these privacy coins and we can then trade with each other. We need to be able to buy food. We need to be able to go to, you know, a farmer's market and buy groceries. We need to be able to survive off of crypto. We need to move it from being a niche asset that only a few people use to something that everybody can use as an alternative to CBDC, because otherwise it just simply won't work. It won't have any utility. So I'm going to give a talk next week on my own podcast. You know, I can go into it in more detail, but I'm going to make an open call to create an open source multi-coin wallet that is easy to use, like so easy to use. You could onboard a boomer and, you know, instantly, and a multi-coin point of sale solution for businesses. And again, this has to be an open source project so that it's not controlled by a company. There's no central entity. We have to build a basic multi-coin solution that is open source to be able to have something that can compete with CBDCs. And I think that open source solution should also include gold and silver.
You seem to be making an interesting face over there. Chris, what did you have on your mind?
No, I completely agree. Those are all good paths to go down. I mean, we have had crypto solutions that are developed, not necessarily originally open source, but AnyPay was a great solution.
Yeah.
It's, I guess, I'm not sure its current state. But the idea that you could accept different cryptos as a business, for me, it was really appealing that I could do that and let someone else accept it for me, like employees, and I could still be secure through that whole transaction. That was great. Something like that needs to happen. I just don't know how far, what the economics might be of someone getting to develop that. Even open source needs economics behind it.
Yeah. Well, let me be clear. I'm going to say if CBDCs are here in 6 months, it's an existential threat to every crypto. Yeah. So this should get funding from the communities in multiple coins on the basis of, if we don't build this so that it actually has utility, we're all gone and all of this is going to be wiped out. And I want to say something that when I got my first Bitcoin in 2012, I was like, wow, like it was a magical experience, right? It was fast, it was cheap, and I knew there was no banker, there was no third party involved. It was better, easier, and cheaper to use than anything that existed. That was in 2012. Since 2012, Zelle, Venmo, Apple Pay, Google Pay, now X Payments, even FedNow have been developed. So the traditional banking system has beaten crypto in terms of Bitcoin no longer has the faster, cheaper, or easier to use. It's actually much worse on all of those things. And now it's fast, and now it's slower, now it's cheaper. And I think a lot of times within crypto, people compete with one another without realizing that we're competing for money, and it has to work in the complete marketplace against the traditional system. And we've lost, we've gotten destroyed against the traditional financial system. So what we need in this open source project, I would actually lead with a UX UI person, the designer, to create an interface that makes it easy for everyone to use, as opposed to, I'm not trying to belittle coders, but coders are not known for having great expertise with UI. And a lot of times there's kind of a niche, oh, well, I'm the only one who knows how to use this, or me and my, tribe can use this. Why can't you use it? And that's not how money should work.
Yeah, that's true. But what do you mean by UI user
interface?
User interface, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of times so many people who are like well-meaning and very smart in the Liberty community here will tell me like, why are you even using Signal? You need to be using this new thing. And like, there's no possible way I'm going to figure out how to use it because it's too complicated.
Right.
And they're like, well, it's 0.1% more secure than Signal.
Exactly.
And it's just like, you guys aren't thinking of like adoption, like what will make people want to do it. AnyPay was great for that because it's so simple and easy to understand and use. And I'm really not sure what's going on with it either. But really, that's like the number one thing that cryptocurrency needs. Like the other day, maybe like a month ago, I was at, I don't know if he talks about it in public, but a member of the community's house for a cryptocurrency sermon meeting, like church meetings, Shire Free Church. He's a Shire Free Church minister, and he gives a sermon about Bitcoin and then or cryptocurrency, and then there's a discussion after. And the discussion had turned into, by the time I got there, what is like the next thing that cryptocurrency needs for mass adoption? And so many people were just like, I just felt like completely missing the point. I was like, you know what it needs is like people to just go and ask everybody that they buy from, like, would you take cryptocurrency for this anytime you buy something? And then also really needs a new AnyPay, like something that has a bunch of people behind it. I don't even know where to start with that. I don't know anyone who can do it. We don't even have like Cell 411 created at this point, so I don't have personal contacts that can do it. But it is really the most important thing we need next. If you don't know what an AnyPay is, it's basically just an app that a person who runs a business can connect their personal wallet to, and then their employee who they don't trust with their literal, like, their, you know, actual bank account information, you know, because you just don't trust your employees with that, not because of anything wrong with the employees. You just don't give your employee your, like, TD Bank login, right, online login. So you don't have to trust them with that. All you do is hand them a tablet with AnyPay installed on it, and then the customers can go up, scan a QR code on that tablet, and send their payment directly to you. And the employee gets like a thing that pops up that says sent successfully, so they know that you actually paid. And that's what cryptocurrency needs, because the important thing about cryptocurrency is not to hold on to it like digital gold, because if while this happens, what Aaron is talking about right now, the price isn't going to be skyrocketed to the moon. There's no point in using it as an investment instead of what it was actually created for, digital cash, if it's going to be completely not used by anyone and lose value rapidly when CBDCs come out.
Right. And Aaron, I don't want you to think I'm against that idea. I completely support it. And when you posted that on X, I read that and I'm like, yeah, that's exactly what we need to do. This needs to be something that anyone can use, first of all, and it needs to support everything, not just this, you know, you've got a solution for Dash and you've got a solution for Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. It needs to be all encompassing. And I think you're on the right track. I think the incentive is survival. And you need more developers and people involved in these projects to realize that literally their project survival depends on this happening at every time.
Yeah, I'm going to make a formal presentation about this next Wednesday on my podcast, The Aaron Day Show, to lay all of it out. And I already have a half a dozen designers and everything, but I want to lay out the whole scenario, because as I've talked to people, even in the crypto space, I have not found anybody that's really up to speed on how serious the CBDC threat is. But I think after my interview tomorrow and I pull all of this together, I think I will be able to make a very compelling case that the DOJ has made a concerted effort since 2017 to target the Liberty community, and that CBDCs are imminent, and in fact could be one emergency away, and that we've got to stop our divisions and try to work together to solve this, or you know, in my opinion, it's the end of free will. So that's how severe I think it is.
I agree that it's that severe. I just want to take this one call while we have some time before the break. Unscreened caller, you're on Free Talk Live. What's on your mind?
Yes. Hello, this is Mary Newton Rothbard Jr. calling from Hartford, Connecticut. How are you all doing this evening?
I don't know if I believe you. Go ahead, Rothbard Jr.
Yes, well, I'm calling, as you know, I'm from the anarcho-capitalist school of libertarian thought, and I believe I heard the name of one of my good friends mentioned earlier, Mr. Jeffrey Epstein, God rest his soul. He was a great financier and a great man, and I miss him dearly. But, I am from the old Austrian school of economics, and I'm really not too familiar with the new cryptocurrency that you guys, you New Age libertarians speak of. So I had a question about cryptocurrency, if it's okay, from the resident Bitcoin expert there, Mr. Aaron Gay.
Okay, what's your question?
My question is, does he believe that in the near future we will be able to use cryptocurrency, Bitcoin, or any crypto that runs on the Bitcoin currency blockchain to pay for sex with 15 to 16-year-old girls?
do I think that's an interesting question?
And thank you. Well,
sure.
Rothbard Jr.
Yeah. Yeah. You know,
so yeah,
I think cash is the preferred, you know, vehicle for that, because remember, transactions on a Bitcoin blockchain are actually tracked, so it's more likely people would use cash for something like that.
And in public, the government in Ian's case, they kept calling it pseudonymous, and that's exactly what it is. And then towards the end, when they were trying to make a different point, they kept calling it like completely
completely anonymous.
Or anonymous,
no one
yeah.
could ever know.
Yeah, they would change that.
Except, yeah, yeah.
I feel like I could talk about the Ian case forever, and sometimes it's like, well, right, today's Roger Ver's day. And
that's what I never got about the argument against crypto, where they were like, oh, they're hiding things from you to buy guns and drugs. But that's what you use cash for.
Yep. Yep. That's and the thing.
I was reading after Roger's indictment, I was looking into U.S. reports on money laundering and what is being laundered, what money is being laundered. And the vast majority, it's U.S. cash.
Huh.
You know, I mean, it's not cryptocurrency. It's not any of this. I mean, there is so little adoption of cryptocurrency. The idea that these vast criminal enterprises are just using Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies to shuffle money around, it's not the case. It would be something we could say for crypto adoption if it did.
Well, thank you so much for your time, Aaron Day. And I agree. I think that this is serious enough to be considered a possible end of free will as we know it on planet Earth. If people don't stand up for themselves and their freedom and privacy in money, that's a really important thing to stand up for. 603-283-6160. More Free Talk Live coming up.
Eleutheromania, the insatiable desire for freedom. It's the new three-song heavy metal EP from Captain Kickass. Available now on your favorite music app, or get it directly from CaptainKickass.com.
that you control. And 603-283-6160 is the phone number you can call. 603-283-6160. And Cobra Engineering is a platinum level amplifier with us, and we would like to thank Cobra Engineering so much for being a platinum level amplifier with us. That means that they went to amps.freetalklive.com. That's amps.freetalklive.com, and learned how they could get some perks and benefits for supporting the show. And we really appreciate all of our amplifiers. So I would like to thank Cobra Engineering again. I didn't want to get it wrong, so I had to check again. Thank you so much. And if you would like to help support the show, you can go to amps.freetalklive.com. And with you on the show tonight, you've got me, Bonnie,
Lori,
and Chris.
And we still have Aaron Day here. We have at least one person that has a question for him, but we wanted to talk more about the Roger Ver arrest specifically. So I pulled up this article from BitcoinMagazine.com. The title is DOJ Arrests Early Bitcoin Investor Roger Ver, Bitcoin Jesus, that's what he's called, on charges of tax fraud. Now, you said you've read the indictment, correct, Aaron?
I have read the indictment, and it's 26 pages long.
Right.
And it just basically goes through, you know, step by step, kind of a timeline of actually, when you read it, it's hard to come away thinking that Roger's guilty. It's like, well, he hired this attorney, then he hired this attorney, and then he hired an appraiser to determine the value of his business, and then he hired another appraiser. And
right.
So, to be honest, again, if I believed in the integrity of the courts, I would think that Roger would win. However, frankly, after sitting through Ian's sentencing phase and everything else and watching what happened to Ian, the facts are not necessarily important in these types of federal cases. But it certainly doesn't look like on the surface Roger is doing anything wrong. And the one thing that struck me is, and I want you to go back in time and consider what we're talking about here. This was in 2014. And what the U.S. government is alleging is that Roger had 130,000 Bitcoin. And in order to leave the country, there's this exit tax. So he would have to pay whatever this percentage is, 25%, whatever it is. He can't pay in Bitcoin, which means he actually has to sell his Bitcoin. To which Roger's, I think, Roger's question was, well, have you factored in when you're trying to figure out what the effective price is for this conversion? Because they're saying, oh, Bitcoin is worth this much. You have this many. You have to multiply those two numbers together and then pay 25% of that, right? Well, what Roger's saying, that was such a large amount of Bitcoin. If you try to dump 130,000 Bitcoin on the market in 2014, the price would drop 80%.
Whoa.
Like Roger couldn't have sold, he wouldn't have been able to pay the tax bill even if he sold 100% of his Bitcoin, I think was the point that he was trying to make. So
Whoa.
The actual, what they were asking him to do technically wasn't even possible. And whether or not they should have asked him to do it in the first place is a separate question. And I would say the answer is no, because he sought out legal and financial assistance and went by what he was told. So the idea to make this criminal. And so, of course, the question with this is, you know, how many people get to just pay a, you know, penalties and interest? It's a slap on the wrist and then you move on your way. Is that what they want? Do they just want money, or do they want him behind bars? And that's going to be the interesting thing to see regarding what the motives are. However, I want to take a step back. If you don't know Roger very well, he has a video on his website, and I posted on Twitter today or yesterday as well. I think it's rogerver.com or rogerkver.com. And he talks about the last time he was in prison. This isn't the first time he's faced this. Roger went to federal prison for selling fireworks.
Yep.
And he sold fireworks that were being sold by other retailers. He was the only person to go to prison for selling these fireworks. And the reason that he went to prison is because he was loud and vocal and public talking about the fact that taxation is theft, talking about the war state, talking about police brutality. He was targeted even the first time around because of his political beliefs. So now here we are, he's left the country, and he's still very much, he's been on message, but he just also happens to release this book that reveals that Bitcoin was hijacked, which is something that it appears as though the government and the Federal Reserve wanted to have happen. It's a very credible book. So what better way to discredit his book than to say, oh, you can't trust hijacking Bitcoin. It was written by a tax fraud, right? That is what they're trying to do, in my opinion, is they're trying to discount him in order to discount his message. But the book Hijacking Bitcoin, to me, is an absolute fact-filled. And I will tell you, to the extent that it's fact-filled, I tweeted about it. And the main core Bitcoin developers that Roger talks about in the book blocked me immediately on Twitter. Wow. There's no engagement in the facts. Nobody wants to discuss facts. Nobody has debated with me online. That people will say, oh, Roger's bad, we don't agree with this. No one has actually made a compelling fact-based argument to dispute a single thing that has been said in this book. So I truly do think that something is afoot here. And I checked with the co-author of the book today. They actually started writing this book in 2020. So people will say, well, it's not like the government just filed these charges today. They've been working on this, right? So there's been grand jurors, whatever they've been doing behind the scenes. And I think that stuff started in 2023. But they've been working on this book since 2020. And I certainly would imagine, knowing the state of the surveillance state, they would be aware of the fact that he's been working on it since 2020.
Yep, I believe that. Yeah, that's a good point, because people like to say that a lot. Like, well, the government's been probably working on the charges. And I totally agree. They probably already knew that he was also working on the book. And plus, like, they want to go after him for more than just that. I think it's just like Ian in a lot of ways, because they want to go after Ian because he's selling Bitcoin and promoting Bitcoin, but also because of his radio show. Mm-hmm. And they always want to stop subversive people from having a voice. So like when they raided our house, they unplugged random wires connected to getting our show out to the radio. And this was just a perfect time for them to drop these charges against Roger right after he wrote a book. I don't know if they think that it maybe makes him look bad and less credible because he's been arrested, because there are actually people who think like that. It's super sad. But there are people that think like that if you are charged with something, you are guilty. There are even free staters that think like that, and it's getting really annoying. There's like a personal thing happening right now where a friend of mine is charged with something, and less than half of the people are saying, yeah, well, that's basically he's guilty. It's just like, how are you even a libertarian at that point? Like, you just don't know how this works, do you? And it's the same thing with Roger Ver. There were already big crypto people yesterday saying, good riddance, I pay my taxes. You are not in crypto for the right reasons.
Congratulations.
Right.
Well, one of the other things that surfaced, and this is related to this hijacking of Bitcoin. So Bitcoin was hijacked. This company, Blockstream, is the beneficiary of this. And I'm not going to go into all the details of Blockstream, but this is an absolute fact. The first and largest investor in Blockstream is a company called AXA, and their CEO was literally the president of the Bilderberg Group. So you want to talk about conspiracy theories, this is who dumped money. It has all of these MasterCard people and traditional finance and everything in it. But there was a tweet that surfaced where one of the co-founders of Blockstream threatened to report Roger to the IRS. And listen, I don't care who your competitors are or who your enemies are. If you are weaponizing the IRS against anybody, you're the problem.
Yeah, that's like threatening someone's life. I mean, that's what they literally do. They take people's lives away.
Using the government gun.
Saying that the person, quote, caused loss to the IRS, and it's just absolutely ridiculous, because they don't deserve any money from you, and that's what they say in the indictment to Roger Ver, that he caused some certain amount of loss to the IRS, and it's absolutely ridiculous that they think just for renouncing your citizenship that they are owed money. It's crazy.
I hope some people absorb the fact that when they tell others, oh, if you don't like it, just leave. I hope they absorb the fact that you can't just leave.
Yeah,
you cannot.
That is
they
so true.
Will not allow it.
Well, you can. You just have to come up with the exit tax.
Oh, no, they would probably find something else. They'd find something else.
That's exactly what happened here. He paid the exit tax, and then they said, oh, yeah, it's not
They'll change
the
rules for what the exit tax is.
Right, yeah.
That's exactly what happened here. Well, we do have a caller in line who has a question for Aaron Day. So, Ricky from the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, what question did you have for Aaron Day?
Thank you there, Miss Bonnie. Sister Lori. Brother Chris, Brother Aaron, if I may. I do have a question, actually. Now, the Thursday morning that Saudi Arabia and Egypt joined the BRICS alliance, that Thursday night, I went on the air with Brother Ian, and I made three predictions. I'm going to run them by you, and I have a reason for this. I want to get your thoughts on it. The predictions were that around July, say July of 2025, gas price is going to go sky high to biblical epic proportions. And then by the end of 2025, the dollar is going to fall. And then by the end of the first quarter of 2026, I'm predicting this country will become a third world country. Now, I currently have a bet with Brother Richie, five dash per bet. On said predictions. The only thing he did is he wanted me to put a dollar amount. I think I went too high on this. I said $10. I think it's going to be more like $8, you know? And I wanted to get this five dash per bet. And I wanted to get your thoughts on the likelihood that I'm going to win or lose based on my timing here.
Well, it's really hard to make timing predictions, obviously, given the number of variables going on. I mean, if I were to look at these, it would have to be specific numbers. So, I mean, the first one, you said gas sky high. I mean, it would have to be a specific number. But will gas?
Well, yeah, I think I went too high with the $10. I think I did. I think it's going to be more like $8. But nonetheless,
I think it could be more than that. I mean, if you look at, you know, one big event wipes everything out. I want to say, the banking system is going to collapse no matter what. The question is whether we speed it up or not. But right now, the banks have no reserve requirements. They're not required to hold any customer deposits in reserves. And they are depending on commercial real estate, residential real estate, student loans, credit cards to be paid back on time. And they aren't. Those things are already reaching 2008 levels, which is why we had a bank collapse last week. So I think the financial system could collapse before your July 2025 timeframe, if it's going to happen, I think it could happen even before then. What the dollar amount's going to be, who knows? The second one, though, when you say end of 2025 for the collapse of the dollar, how do you define collapse of the dollar?
When I say collapse, it took us three calls to come to these conclusions. What it came down to, when I mean collapse, I mean it's going to completely collapse where the dollar's worth absolutely nothing. And that's where I come in for 2026. By the end of that quarter, it will be a third world country. It's going to the stuff's going to fall apart, you know?
Well, let me ask you a little trick here. So, because these kinds of bets are always difficult, I've done things with prediction markets before. So, the end of the dollar. Mm-hmm. So, if they create a CBDC and call it something else, a digital dollar or something that's not a dollar, how does that affect this?
I thought of that, but see, here's the problem, Brother Aaron. It's the same fiat currency. It's the same fiat currency. What it's based on. See, the whole thing. Why I'm making these predictions, and it's because of the BRICS alliance. That this was a plan, a well thought out plan. And to show you even more so, if you take the big anniversary, 250, and you subtract it from 2026. I'm sure you already got the math when it comes up to. It comes out to 1776. I don't see any accident here. So I'm looking at one fiat currency is the same as the next. It's nothing. It's still nothing. So they won't even be able, the way I see it, and my predictions are correct, they won't even be able to do the CBDC because it'll be equally as worthless. It's gone because it's the gold-backed currency by the BRICS alliance that I see kicking in that I actually didn't take seriously at first until I saw Saudi Arabia and Egypt joined the BRICS alliance. Now I'm taking it seriously. And it's based on other things. And I gave a full analysis that night of the players, which I'm not going to go into all of that, but I'm sure you can just envision those that are part of BRICS and plus ourselves, you know.
Well,
what it's coming down to.
Yeah, I'll say this. So I actually have a chapter on this in my book. The collapse of the dollar is inevitable. Every fiat currency in human history has failed. The average fiat currency lasts 27 years. Even for the last, you know, we are the global reserve currency. If you look at the five previous global reserve currencies, they lasted an average of 94 years. We've been well over that. And this guy did an analysis of the 775 fiat currencies, and he found that there are seven main reasons that they fail. And when you look at those reasons, the dollar's flashing red. So BRICS is one of the seven reasons. One of the seven reasons is competition from other nations. But other reasons on the top seven list include technology. It includes inflation, government corruption, excess military spending. Again, you go down the line, the collapse of the dollar is inevitable. The question is, what is it going to be replaced with? Is it going to be replaced with CBDC? Or are we going to step in and rally everybody together and separate money and state once and for all with a multi-coin, multi-asset approach? That remains to be seen. We still have free will, so I guess we can shift that outcome.
That's a big question there, Brother Aaron, that I got for you, and I throw it in. Now, I don't see, like I said, I think we can just forget about CBDC because it's just a repackaging of the same exact thing. Now, here's the question. Cryptocurrency, I would be fine with cryptocurrency. That would work fine for me. And I think it would work fine for people, especially if we need something to pay our workers. That's why we're going to go into a third world country. But the question is there some way are we going to be able to implement it?
Well, so again, I think we are going to get CBDCs based on, I don't know if you heard the rest of it, but the technology has already been developed. I actually think we could have it within the next 6 months. But your question as to how to implement it, the way we implement these things is by us starting now, by recruiting all of our friends and family. I'm going around the country doing workshops, giving people gold backs, giving people silver rounds, giving people cryptocurrency, and empowering them, teaching them, having them do the same thing, go to friends and family, go to local businesses. That's the way that we do it, and we can start it now. In fact, we don't have to start it now. People like Ian and people like Roger Ver started this in 2010. And that's, Roger Ver got the nickname Bitcoin Jesus because he evangelized and went all over the place giving people Bitcoin. Where did Roger learn about Bitcoin? He learned about it from Ian. He learned about it from Mark. And Ian has spread cryptocurrency throughout the state of New Hampshire through ATMs, signing up businesses. That's the way to do it. This is the model. It's already been shown it can be done, but what it needs is more people doing it. And in my opinion, it needs people doing it around a central mission. And that central mission now is, this isn't just a nice, cool piece of technology that you can play around with. Doing this is how we defeat tyranny. And so I think if we can get people rallied around that message, maybe we'll be able to wake a few more people up and really get this thing going.
I think, like Bonnie said, something like AnyPay would be really important. Making it easy to use and spend is really important to get people to use it.
And I'm more optimistic. I really do believe that people are looking for something else. They don't like the idea of a CBDC. I really believe that. I think they don't like to be surveilled. They don't. And this, like I said, crosses both political boundaries.
And I definitely think people should be comparing it more to like the social credit scores that China have and stuff like that, because Republicans have already been against that. So you have at least like half people right there that won't agree. Well, thank you so much for the call, Ricky. I'm glad you got to get that question out to somebody who's an expert, because he's really serious about that bet he's made with Richie Rich, and they talk about it a lot on their show. But getting back into the Roger Ver arrest itself, this from BitcoinMagazine.com. Says Roger Ver, a prominent early investor in Bitcoin, famously dubbed Bitcoin Jesus, has been indicted by the Department of Justice on charges of mail fraud, which I haven't figured that part out yet because I haven't read the whole indictment.
Well, it's anytime you send anything through the mail.
Hmm. But like, why is he being charged with it? Do you know?
Because it is a stackable charge. It's you've been charged with everything else. Let's just stack on, throw mail fraud on there.
They're saying he lied about the paperwork. He signed under oath that he claimed that he had this many coins, and then they're claiming that he had more coins than that. And then he sent the paperwork where he claimed, made the alleged false claim about how many coins he had through the mail. And so then they just add the mail fraud charge. I mean,
that's so silly.
That's standard operating procedure.
That is so silly. Like, I would have thought it had something to do, when I first saw mail fraud, I was like, does this have something to do with like more of his like selling fireworks on eBay thing? That's what I thought this might be related to, maybe.
No, they want to stack as many charges as they can. So when they do their press release, it lists 5 or 6 or 10 or 20 different charges.
Fraudster.
Because then he is obviously a criminal mastermind.
Yeah, there was
a vast danger to all of us.
There was a survey, a study, something that they did. And they found, by asking potential jurors, if somebody has a lot of charges, would you think that they're more guilty than if they had just a few charges? And they said, yeah.
There was somebody on either on Ian's actual jury or somebody who was interviewed before then, I don't remember at this point, who said, yeah, I would, like, they asked that question and she said, yeah, I would definitely be more inclined to think the person was guilty if there's more charges. It's just wow.
And that's so why they stupid. Do it.
That's why they throw things on there like obstruction and
mail fraud. Well, he's must have done something.
Yeah, at least one of these has to be true.
Look at this laundry list. He must be guilty of one of them.
Yep, it's absolutely ridiculous. So it's mail fraud, tax evasion, and filing false tax returns. Ver was arrested over the weekend in Spain based on these criminal charges, and the U.S. intends to seek his extradition for trial, which is so scary. And he's go ahead.
Well, it's scary. It's also scary to think about that the last time somebody was in Spain awaiting extradition was John McAfee.
Right.
That one comes to mind.
And then he, quote, killed himself in prison in Spain. It's Free Talk Live. More coming up. 603-283-6160. More about the Roger Ver arrest, Bitcoin Jesus, who learned about cryptocurrency on Free Talk Live.
The Shire Free Church offers a sanctuary to those seeking an escape from state churches.
The Shire Free Church is an interfaith, diverse group of people that may not share identical theological beliefs.
As a member in or minister of the Shire Free Church, you are a sovereign individual and may be the faith of your choice.
We don't claim to have all of the answers.
We are open to all peaceful people.
We want to learn from each other.
What unifies the Shire Free Church and its diverse members is peace,
love,
and liberty. There are many paths to God, one for every individual.
The Shire Free Church does not define a specific path beyond these parameters that must be your foundation.
Peace as your way,
love as your guide,
and liberty as your light.
Learn more at church.shiresociety.com.
That's church.shiresociety.com. Control 603-283-6160 is the phone number here. That is 603-283-6160. You can call in with whatever's on your mind. Right now we're talking about Roger Ver's arrest in Spain, where he may be extradited to the United States for mail fraud and tax-related charges. But Free Talk Live is brought to you by LibertyMinded.com. Official Free Talk Live gear like t-shirts and hoodies are available at libertyminded.com. Plus, you'll find a unique collection of cool and funny liberty-oriented clothing at libertyminded.com. That's libertyminded.com. And with you on Free Talk Live tonight, you've got me, Bonnie,
Lori,
and Chris.
And in the last segment, and we have Aaron Day here joining us via Jitsi remotely. And in the last segment, we started talking about this article from bitcoinmagazine.com Aaron Day did read the indictment. I started reading the indictment of Roger Ver, and this article says the indictment alleges that Ver, formerly of Santa Clara, California, owned and operated MemoryDealers.com Inc. and AgileStar.com Inc., both of which were involved in selling computer and networking equipment. Starting in 2011, Ver purportedly began acquiring bitcoins for himself and his companies, amassing a significant amount by 2014. What about Sickle CAI? Wait, was that him? Oh, wait, that's the wrong guy.
Wrong guy.
Uh-oh, my bad. That has nothing to do with anything. Don't go after him, government.
Great. They've got another one.
It says, amassing a significant amount by 2014, totaling around, this is the amount of bitcoins he had by 2014, 131,000 bitcoins, with a value of approximately $240 million at that time. Ver then obtained citizenship in St. Kitts and Nevis in 2014 and renounced his U.S. citizenship shortly thereafter in a process known as expatriation. This action subjected him to U.S. tax laws, including reporting capital gains from the sale of his worldwide assets. Worldwide, people, it's so ridiculous. Including bitcoins and paying an exit tax on those gains. The indictment alleges that Ver provided false or misleading information to a law firm and an appraiser, concealing the true number of bitcoins owned by him and his companies. This resulted in the preparation and filing of false tax returns that significantly undervalued the companies and their Bitcoin holdings. In 2017, Ver's companies still held approximately 70,000 Bitcoins, which he allegedly sold on cryptocurrency exchanges for around $240 million. Despite not being a U.S. citizen at that time, Ver was still legally obligated to report to the IRS and pay taxes on certain distributions. Wow. So it's like what people say when people say that you know what, if you don't like it, you can just leave. If you just leave, they're going to still say that you owe them more money if you do certain things.
Yeah, they consider you their property. If you were born here, are property of the U.S. government in their eyes.
That's true. It seems like it.
It's pathetic. I just can't imagine the chutzpah these people have that, no, you were born here. You belong to us. I mean, and this doesn't stop. You can go somewhere else.
Why didn't you just choose to be born somewhere else?
Right.
If you make enough money, these people who were born in the same area as you and then got into the parasite class think that you owe them. And that's absolutely disgusting and crazy. Yeah. That is, we live in a crazy land. We live in La La Land, where you make money and you are somehow obligated to pay people who don't give you any kind of services that you want, even to the point that you expatriate and don't say, I really don't want your services. I don't need you.
I'm done.
Also, you buy something, say you buy a house and the house is in terrible condition and you put in the work and the money to make the house better. Now you owe them more money because your house got better.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. All of this.
They
stuff
did
so
something.
Bad.
So who knows what? They didn't do anything. But right. Now you owe them more.
So far, is this everything that you already knew about the indictment so far, Aaron?
Yeah, no, that tracks exactly. And again, as you go through this and you start to see the details, again, the interesting point that Roger makes is that, you know, he couldn't have possibly sold those bitcoins to pay the tax liability because there wasn't $130,000 worth of, or 130 Bitcoin worth of market volume in 2014.
Right.
And so it's this is obviously politically motivated. Hmm. But there's one other thing you have to think about this. So when I interviewed Roger, Roger does bounce back and forth between St. Kitts and Japan. And when I scheduled my interview with him, we were going back and forth. He was going to go from Japan to then Dubai. So I want to throw it out there because we all know what it's like. I mean, obviously, they obviously planned and prepared it to raid Ian to make sure that they knew he was there. How did they know and what level of tracking and how much investment were they putting on to know that Roger would be in Spain on that date? Because I have not yet been able to find an example of where he was on any public notice or where he tweeted that he was even going to be in Spain. So it actually takes quite an effort to try to track somebody down that's just on the move in the United States. The fact that they were able to find out well enough in advance to coordinate with the Spanish authorities to have him arrested tells you to the extent to which this is politically motivated, and I think that there's a specific timing element to it. I find it to be not a coincidence that this is just a few weeks after his book was released, because the book has made a very big splash, and it's created a lot of noise. A lot of people that were even BTC maxis, Bitcoin maximalists, have read the book, and people's hearts and minds have actually been changed. Not certainly not everyone, but people that were actually that people were stunned by the information in the book. So I think that the timing on this is suspicious, because these are from, this is going back to 2014. So wait, he left in 2014. You waited a decade to go after him, and then you coordinated to trap him in a country when he hadn't even telegraphed that he was going to be there. So what? So I'm going to be tracking this issue continuously on my Twitter, which is at Aaron R. Day. I've actually created a Twitter community called Free Roger. And, you know, if you're interested in this, follow along, join the community. I'm looking to, if there are people in Spain that can join to provide some insight as to how the prison system works there. I mean, we know it didn't work well for McAfee, but I do want to, I don't want people to be alarmed, you know, like completely about that side of it. They'd already agreed to kind of extradite McAfee. So he was waiting. He was in a different prison than Roger is now. But nevertheless, this needs
to know. I didn't think about if he was in the same prison at all.
I don't believe he's in the same prison yet. But if they do decide, but I mean, obviously they've agreed to extradite him, because if the Spanish authorities were willing to actually go along with arresting him, I'm sure they wouldn't arrest him without the intent to extradite. He wasn't being arrested for any crimes allegedly committed in Spain. Mm-hmm. So clearly this extradition is going to happen.
Wow.
So we have to stay on this. And, you know, to me, this relates, by the way, to what I'm doing. Like I think about what happened to Ian and what's happening to Roger. The purpose of it is to have a chilling effect. So the number one thing that we can do to support Ian and to support Roger is to get more people engaging in freedom, to have more people engaging in peer-to-peer transactions using alternative currencies. That is the number one thing that we can do to support these guys. We can do other things, but to me, let's take this chilling effect and turn it on its head.
I agree.
Let's get more people adopting these currencies.
One thing that Chris Wade always organizes whenever there is some kind of big group of people protesting for Ian, and he's like, "What? We're gonna take some Bitcoin and send it to each person like in a chain, just to show we can do whatever we want. Like, and we're gonna keep using cryptocurrency." And I think that's really funny. And it's the most important thing is to continue using cryptocurrency as peer-to-peer electronic cash instead of just hoarding it. Because what's the point of hoarding it if the government makes it so illegal the price goes down ridiculously? So this indictment alleges that when he allegedly failed to pay taxes on certain distributions when he sold 70,000 Bitcoin in 2017, it says that it caused a loss to the IRS estimated
I love this.
At over $48 million.
Yes, alleged to have caused a loss to the IRS.
How can they even assume any right to money after he left the United States
4 years after
and renounced his citizenship and then sold years later? How can they say that he still owes them?
It says he's legally obligated.
So I'd love to be on a jury and then go, well, the alleged crime here is they deprived the IRS of $48 million. I'm like, give that man a cigar. I mean, why? Why is that a crime?
It's ridiculous.
Well, I was working on a meme related to this, and I'm like, well, what could you do with that $50 million? And that $50 million would have bought the government 588,000 Pfizer vaccine shots. And I'm trying to figure out how many babies would have been murdered through the military budget. So I'm gonna put down a couple of data points around what Roger's
toilets?
$50 million would have been used for. Yeah. So it's terrible. It's absolutely terrible to assume that it's, you know, the IRS for the IRS to assume it's their money. It's pretty straightforward what it is that they're saying. What they're saying is you lied about how many Bitcoins you had. And so lying about it and lying about it through the mail is one thing. And then you actually then owe us that amount of money. And of course, it looks to me like factually, again, this is just the government's complaint. Roger hasn't had a chance to make his case, but Roger is a smart guy. And I suspect that, you know, he actually got good counsel on this. So this is one of these situations where this may come down to a lot of internal squabbling about this stuff. It actually talks in the complaint about, you know, it alleges that Roger's lawyers and appraisers would ask him questions like, how many Bitcoin do you have? And Roger's response back was to give, you know, a response about the current state of the Bitcoin market and to not answer the question. So there's a bunch of stuff like that in there. But, you know, nevertheless, you know, to a certain degree, with all of this Bitcoin stuff, it's actually hard to potentially even remember. I mean, if he's selling Bitcoin through memory dealers, through his business, how do you define the line of you have an S corporation and your business is taking Bitcoin and then you take dividends and everything else? I mean, there's not a clear line of demarcation on this. So it's not even necessarily fraud. It could be, since Bitcoin hasn't been defined as a currency, you know, would he know to treat it that way? I mean, there's a whole bunch of different angles that he could take with this.
And the government's take on what Bitcoin is in 2014 is vastly different than it is today. Mm-hmm. So you're using one definition against something that's changed 20 times. And how many government agencies have defined Bitcoin separately in different ways?
They do.
Completely different ways.
The IRS versus... Yep. FBI, and then regulatory things, they all
commodity,
call it something
else. Is it a security? You know, it's ridiculous.
There's a great video that I posted that I took from Bitcoin.com, which is Roger's thing. It's a 2-minute video, and it does a great job with visuals and music of demonstrating the concept of taxation as theft. And when you watch it, you can assume that the IRS is probably agitated about the fact that Roger's had some viral videos where he has been very outspoken about the concept that taxation is theft. And he's given very passionate videos. One of my favorite videos is from, I think, 2018, of Roger debating this guy, Samson Mao, who represents BTC, and Roger was kind of promoting Bitcoin Cash. And Roger talks about the fact that the high fees of Bitcoin means more dead babies. And he's very passionate about, and he's really passionate. People make fun of him about it, but he's actually, when you watch what he says and how he says it, this is why he is in crypto. He is truly in crypto, so that people everywhere, even in developing nations all over the world, can escape poverty and have a currency that they can use for day-to-day transactions. And so this is completely politically motivated, but we need to stay on top of it. I want to add this. I just got involved in something. There's an event going on in the Libertarian Party is having their national convention in Washington, D.C. Yeah. There's this event coming up called Enemies of the State, D.C. Bash. So it's like 9 o'clock at night, Eastern time, at the Washington Hilton on May 24th. And it's to recognize people who have been, that are enemies of the state, who have been promoting freedom. So
political
it's going
prisoners.
To celebrate political prisoners. It's going to celebrate Edward Snowden. It's going to celebrate Julian Assange. It's going to celebrate Ian Freeman. It's going to celebrate Ross Ulbricht. And it's going to celebrate Roger Ver. And I'm going to be there kind of introducing Roger's piece of this. But I'm excited to be a part of this. And I know you guys are sponsoring it. So I hope people check this out.
I'm going to try to be there, maybe too impossible, but Mark Edge will definitely be there emceeing the event. And I think that's a really good thing to promote. So thanks for bringing it up. I think more people need to realize what's going on. Look at all the examples there are of political prisoners, of people who just believe in, you know, making the world a more free place. It's getting, I know I keep saying it's ridiculous, but it is, because we live in legal land, law land, and we don't live in a place that makes sense. Like, the United States is a scary, evil corporation and empire, and they will go after you if you do anything that they see as a threat.
Even if it's just your opinion.
Right. I know that they're trying to go after this show. There is just so many coincidences happening all at once. Now GCN's going out of business. I just really think that they're going after us still, and they... thought that they could get rid of Free Talk Live by just putting Ian Freeman in a cage. They thought, because they're stupid, that just unplugging a few wires was going to keep us off the air. I mean, it did for one night, or maybe even like part of the first night that Ian was gone, then we're back on the air. It's just these people don't want, they don't want the average person to know the truth. And when that person says that less Bitcoin being used, it equals more dead babies, I think these people that are protesting in about Gaza really need to realize that that is actually absolutely the case. That if they don't want dead babies and a genocide happening in Gaza, well, stop using their money, the dollar, and start using cryptocurrency. Just like starve the state. Stop using any of their services. Don't be on their welfare. Grow up and take self-responsibility for yourself. Don't be reliant on these people. Use cryptocurrency and gold and cash and just exit their system, because it's a disgusting, evil system that is absolutely directly responsible for tons and tons of, like, a million people in Iraq, and now how many, like, 13,000 dead people in Gaza? I mean, it's related because the United States gives them tons of money every year, Israel.
Mm-hmm.
You just need to exit and start taking care of yourself without relying on the evil, evil parasite class who doesn't actually care about you at all. If they did, they would want you to be as prosperous as possible and not, oh, well, we'll give you $2,000 a month, but if you put anything into savings, you're going to not get your welfare and you have to work, you know, only a couple hours a month and your kids will just barely be getting by instead of, you know, they don't want you to prosper and be doing well because then you don't need them.
Yeah, you can't have, what is it, like $2,000 in your savings over $2,000? Nobody can do anything with $2,000. Yep. You can't relocate. You can't open a business. You can't do anything with that. So it's, you know, just enough to feel like you have something, but not enough to do anything with. So that way you are still helpless
and easier to track via and CBDC control. And everything and control, because you have a lot less control over your life if you don't have control of the money that you use, the money that you earn from spending your time and work and energy. That if you can't control that, then you don't own your time and work and energy, which means you're a slave. If you use the U.S. dollar, if you pay taxes, if you're on their welfare especially, you are nothing but a slave to them. You can still exit now, but the time is honestly, I really believe, running out for you to be able to exit. And I also think, and I think most of us here on the show believe, that moving to New Hampshire to be in a community of people who think the same way is an important next step. If you live in a big city, well, guess what? Everybody around you is going to be like, hey, I got the CBDC. Why are you being a, you're a wrecker. This would work fine if just you would comply.
We can't trade with you. You can't buy groceries at our store because you don't have the CBDC. Yep. You can't pay your rent because you don't have it. Yep. Sorry.
That's exactly how that's going to work.
Yeah, but I think we need to stay. So, and obviously this is why I'm in New Hampshire and joined the Free State Project and moved here as well. But I think that we actually have to defeat this, because the end goal of this is one global government and one global currency. And in fact, you're already seeing this with the World Health Organization pandemic alliance, which they're working on passing, where we're basically handing up more of our sovereignty to these multinational organizations. And the plan for CBDCs is to link all the CBDCs together, but there's already an IMF plan to build one single CBDC called WorldCoin or something like that. So understand that we're not going to be able to hide away. We need to actually stop this thing. But in the meantime, we move as well and find a community that you can weather the storm. But we also have to acknowledge that, you know, we're not going to be able to hide. They will literally come and force us to. They'll force their views on us unless we shut them off, and the only way to shut them off is to stop using their money and actually crash their system. That's the conclusion I've come to anyway.
I definitely don't believe in hiding. I think if you move to New Hampshire just to let everyone else do the freedom work, you're on the wrong side. And I think that if people even just come here and spend gold and silver and cryptocurrency instead of US dollars, then they're really doing activism. I'm not saying you don't have to be Ian Freeman or anything like that. But one thing that I think is really important is also talking to the people in like the nation as well and see and try to wake up as many people as possible. Otherwise, I wouldn't do Free Talk Live. I know that there are some people who say, just give up on that. It's not important. But if they have a one world government, well, then they will just squash the 6,000 or whatever people in the free state. So I agree with you on that point as well.
Well, when I travel, I mean, I've given talks and or workshops in 20 different states. The number of people that are familiar with Free Talk Live and especially Ian is actually very high. And I've met some great people who so the impact of Free Talk Live is substantial and it's an ongoing thing. So it's something that, you know, you definitely don't stop because the word is getting out even one way or another to places like California. So.
Wow. This article, I think it's really cool that they end this article with this paragraph. It says, Acting Deputy Assistant Attorney General Stuart M. Goldberg and U.S. Attorney Martin Estrada announced the charges with IRS Criminal Investigations Cybercrimes Unit handling the case. An indictment is an allegation, and all defendants are presumed innocent until proven guilty in court.
Disclaimer, we have to say that.
I don't know if like Bitcoin Magazine is like on our side or whatever in that case, but not every media would point that out.
Yeah, I know. And they're, I mean, that's right out of the press release of the Justice Department. They do that stuff all the time.
They say that too?
Oh, yeah. I'm looking at the Justice Department press release and indictment is merely an allegation. They say that stuff, but, you know.
Well, otherwise it would be defamation. I mean, to a certain degree, right? I mean, you have to claim innocent. You still have to claim innocent until proven guilty, even if you're rigging the system and, you know, engaging in prosecutorial misconduct. They still have to say that they're following the rules.
Exactly.
I also think that sometimes they bring something like that up just to actually be saying the opposite. Like, let me give an example. Say what I mean. In Ian's case, after a trial one day was over for the day, the judge stopped everything to say, and I'd like to tell you guys, the jury, when you go home tonight, you're going to see on TV, possibly, like, you don't even know that they will, but anyways, right. You're going to see on TV, on the news, that
you
a man...
You may see something on WMUR at 7:15 tonight.
That Sam Bankman-Fried has been arrested, and his crimes are also related to cryptocurrency. I just want you to remember that that has nothing to do with Ian Freeman.
Right.
He's saying that while bringing attention to
Sam Bankman-Fried.
Sam Bankman-Fried and drawing a connection there. Like,
and
yeah,
saying it in the same sentence.
Planting the idea in their heads.
Don't make any rush to any judgments. Of course not.
They like to do this thing where they say that they're doing a thing, so that means they're doing it. Like when they say, like, okay, I'm striking that from the record. That means that you're supposed to believe that they really struck that from their minds. 603-283-6160. More coming up. It's Free Talk Live. Exit the evil empire of the United States. It's Free Talk Live.
I've been told no in many different ways.
I give you an order and you're going to obey it.
Well, George, you can go this way.
You can't do that and you have to leave here.
You cannot bring signs into the rally.
Walk with me.
Well, I'm comfortable here, actually.
Whoa, excuse me.
Who do you think you are?
Excuse me.
There is no video or audio allowed in this office.
No, I have work today. This is...
You ain't going to make...
Wait
a minute. Now.
Wait a minute.
Hey! Oh my God! Unbelievable!
Why are you running?
Because you scared me.
What am I being detained for?
You're being served.
What is this?
You're being served.
What is this?
Bureaucrats have a funny way of telling people no.
That's the sound of the men working on the chain.
Derek Jay's Victimless Crime Spree. You can order your copy of the Director's Cut DVD now at victimlesscrimespree.com.
Free Talk Live.
We'll
that you control. And 603-283-6160 is the phone number here. That's 603-283-6160. Call in with whatever is on your mind. It's Free Talk Live for a reason. You can change the subject or bring up your points about the subject we're talking about. It doesn't matter because it's Free Talk Live. And Free Talk Live is brought to you by ForkFest, happening June 13th through the 16th at Rogers Campground in the beautiful White Mountains of New Hampshire. ForkFest is a fork of the Porcupine Freedom Festival, and I think it's more important than ever to support ForkFest if you, don't want to go to ForkFest for any reason. ForkFest is decentralized, so there's no ticket cost and no one is in charge. For more information and to connect with other attendees, you can visit the unofficial website ForkFest.party. That's ForkFest.party. I think it's just important to show that we are more than an incorporation or than a corporation. We are a community of people who believe in freedom. And freedom is always the answer. What's the question? And that we aren't a group think project that only, you know, is led from the top down or anything like that. I'm definitely going to be going to ForkFest this year. I'm not even sure about ForkFest, but with you in the studio on Free Talk Live tonight, you've got me, Bonnie,
Lori,
and Chris.
And I wanted to go right to the phones because we have Riz on the line. Riz, you're on Free Talk Live. What's on your mind?
It's the Riz Daddy, evolutionary capitalist young geek.
I thought you said Riz.
Yeah, Riz.
Well, that's
Riz
a lie, so you're lying.
Riz Daddy. Wait.
And then I asked, are you the one from Texas? And you said, yeah, so bye. Unscreened caller, you're on Free Talk Live. What's on your mind?
Well, there's a federal statute that makes it a crime for a convicted felon to be in possession of a firearm.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a number of things wrong with that law.
There are.
I agree.
First of all, the Constitution doesn't even give Congress the power to prohibit a convicted felon from having a firearm. These things are delegated by the Constitution to the states. But even then, governments cannot justly infringe on somebody's unalienable rights, such as their right to defend themselves. But even having said that, look at all the different ways that an innocent person can unjustly wind up with a felony conviction, such as by selling Bitcoin without a license when there's no federal law saying you need one. Mm-hmm. And, oh, you were supposed to know that the courts would rule that Bitcoin was funds within the meaning of a federal law that requires that you have a license to run a funds transmission business after the fact.
These are victimless, nonviolent crimes, so they call them.
Yeah, to begin with.
Don't forget that the judge did not put Ian in prison. The U.S. Marshals did. And on Monday, the U.S. Marshals, who were trying to arrest a guy for being on a warrant for being a felon in convicted felon in possession of a firearm.
Right, I saw this in North Carolina.
Yeah. 8 cops wound up getting shot. 4 of them fatally, 3 U.S. Marshals and 1 local law enforcement goon, and it totally served them right. And so I sent Ian a letter telling him what happened and how the only thing the enemy was able to do was to keep sending the freedom fighters more targets.
One thing I think about is that why don't the cops ever get the hint that people don't want their services? I have never been shot at while serving someone an Uber Eats order. They were serving someone a warrant. This person was a felon because of drug-related charges. They had allegedly... Oh, yeah, they were also a felon because of a... I wasn't going to not say this, but I was thinking it was misdemeanor, but no, this was a felony. So they were a felon because of drug charges and also because of a breaking and entering charge from 2014. I don't believe that somebody who even committed a victimful crime like breaking and entering deserves to have no gun rights for 10-plus years. That's just ridiculous. People are safer when people in their community have their right to bear arms. And I think that he could have just made those people whole, you know, fixed the window he broke and returned anything. But the government doesn't want that. The government wants fewer and fewer people with the right to bear arms because they don't like how hard to kill we are. And yeah. I think that's a huge part of it.
isn't the whole point of a prison sentence, according to them, is that's your punishment? Mm-hmm. And then once you serve it, it's over and
you're cured.
You've done your time. You're cured, yeah.
You've paid your debt to society.
Right.
What's the word?
So how do they keep punishing you for the rest of your life?
It's over ridiculous. This? There's a word that they use that means like you're supposed to be changed, like
rehabilitated.
Yeah, you're rehabilitated. So if it's so effective, if we need to keep doing this, putting people in cages because it rehabilitates them, then you know, you're right. Why do they need to be punished in some other way for the rest of their lives, or why can't they bear arms for the rest of their lives? It's even worse. And thank you for the call, by the way. I forget his name. Tom. Tom. Thanks, Riley, our producer. In the studio with us tonight. Even in that situation, because that situation was like, I didn't think that he actually like had the right or something to kill those cops because they were serving a warrant. But I do think that it's kind of just like, it's ridiculous to see the articles about it, and you see the cop bosses saying like, we lost 4 heroes today. You don't lose a hero.
You lost people doing a bad job.
Right.
And
parasites.
Yeah, I won't even get into all that, but I'm saying if your job is to go and use force to try to convince somebody to go back to jail, you're going to F around and find out.
Right.
I mean, that's going to be part of it, and I'm sorry.
Ultimately, that guy also lost his life, so it's just, to me, it's a bad strategy. It's a bad strategy to shoot at cops, even if they're coming to take your rights away from you, because they will just overpower you. They'll keep sending more and more goons. Like, the government doesn't actually care about their goons, so they'll just keep sending them at you like human shields.
And I think you bring up an interesting point, talking about, you know, criminals that have paid their debt to society yet are still punished. But we do arbitrary stuff like that as a nation all the time. Look at all the limitations on the mentally handicapped. You know, you can't own a gun if you've been found insane.
Yeah.
As if you don't have the right to defend yourself, as if you don't have the right to protect yourself from bodily harm.
And they're also saying you can't get better.
That's a good point.
Once we've put this label on you,
yeah,
you can't change.
Yeah,
that's just a huge thing they want to push too, that like mental problems are forever, and like taking walks and losing weight and eating better isn't going to help you get less depressed and things like that. They want you to believe like, no, you have something wrong with you, and so, you'll be broken forever.
And if I'm attacked by someone, I don't care if they're a felon. I don't care if it's their first offense. Mm-hmm. I don't care if they're insane. I'm going to use an appropriate level of force to deny them the ability to injure me
or
anyone I'm
it.
With.
Everyone will be safer if there are more guns. More guns makes the, it's just obvious and proven at this point by the fact that New Hampshire is so safe when it has the most guns of any state, and for sure of any state, like per capita, it has the most people with guns, and it's the safest state, if not like second safest to Vermont, but definitely one of the top one or two safest states in the 50.
I think Maine.
Well, my favorite statistic is the most automatic weapons per capita of any state.
New Hampshire does? Yeah.
We have more machine guns per capita than any other state. So,
right. And it's incredibly safe. I never really felt super unsafe walking around even San Antonio, because like a lot of it is a mindset thing, I really think.
Right.
And I would deliver Uber Eats orders and like kind of creepy apartments sometimes, but I didn't feel like I was about to get killed at any point. But I still feel 10 times safer here. Like, I don't obsessively lock my car behind me and things like that. I feel like my doors could be unlocked for long periods of time and I'd be fine. The only thing that really has threatened my life since I've lived in New Hampshire is the feds breaking into my house.
Well, and you have to think of a thing too, like, I'm sure that most crimes are nonviolent, most. And people who are felons because they didn't file their tax return right now can't own a gun.
Yep.
So how is that in any way related to a punishment for them?
No, it's just
completely arbitrary,
flexing their muscle and saying, you know, look at us, we can do whatever we want to whoever we want.
And also, people who don't follow the rules get punished and get their gun taken away, and now they can't protect themselves.
Right.
Or worse, you go to Illinois.
Why Illinois?
Because they have some of the harshest gun laws in America. So did you feel ridiculously safe in Chicago?
No.
You should have. I mean, they've done everything they could to make you safe.
I thought about how much less safe I was in Chicago a lot. I wasn't even in any bad parts or anything. But even just like getting in Uber drivers' cars, I was like, these people are probably crazy. Probably don't agree with like the conversations Colin and Chris and I are having.
I
tried to keep it kind of normy.
Places with strict gun laws, I think, have more violent crimes.
Right. Chicago has a lot of violent
crimes. New York.
And they have strict gun laws.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We even talked to this store owner in Chicago who he wasn't giving out samples for ice cream. And it's like, how do you know what you want with like these like, designer flavors? How do you know what you want? It's not like it's just like vanilla, strawberry, and people are being ridiculous asking for a sample. And somebody with me asked for a sample of one of the ice cream flavors, and he was like, I can't do that because of COVID. And I was like, seriously? Like, out loud?
Is it 2024?
But then he started to say, he's like, I'm sorry, you want to get me in trouble? I will get a fine from the city. And I was like, really? Like, that's messed up. I'm sorry, they're doing that to you.
How is a sample different than scooping a whole order into a bowl?
It makes no sense.
The small order is more likely to contain COVID for some reason, like the small little piece of ice cream we're going to give you.
It's not like people are sharing the spoon. It's not like there's one sample spoon.
Exactly.
Here you go. Stupid.
Be sure to lick it when you're done.
So we do have a caller on the line. Gigi in South Carolina, you're on Free Talk Live. What's on your mind, Gigi?
Mrs. Freeman, welcome back, my dear.
Hello, thank you.
I'm glad you had a safe journey.
Thank you.
I like what that gentleman is saying. I like it very much.
Oh, Chris here?
Yes, but that's not my reason for calling. I am just expressing my personal opinion this evening, as always. My undergraduate alma mater is UCLA. When I was an undergraduate many, many years ago, I am proud to say openly to all of the listeners, I was politically active as a student.
Okay.
I took pride in voicing my opinions, holding up signs, wearing printed T-shirts, using a megaphone. But you know what, everybody on the staff tonight hosting, as well as my fellow lovers of Free Talk Live, I didn't wear a mask to hide my identity. I didn't demolish or vandalize property that did not belong to me. I wasn't physically abusive to people with other opinions. And we demonstrated about El Salvador, South Africa, and it bothers me. My beloved UCLA, like so many other campuses, is getting out of control, and it concerns me.
So do you think this is a coordinated effort? That's a lot of the talk, is all these people, they're being paid by George Soros to come in.
Oh, very much so, Chris.
Okay.
I said it a moment ago. I like how you think.
I was just saying something, not necessarily thinking it, but... Ask my wife. I don't think that often.
I think that it is definitely possible that it's a coordinated effort. The day that I was traveling...
Social media has students all over the world. Australia, New Zealand, Canada, South Africa, Germany, Norway. You know, it's not... It's instantaneous communication
right.
in today's world. Not like when I was an undergrad at UCLA. But it concerns me that it's really out of control. And I always, always talk about, for me, I'm very passionate about freedom of speech, the free exercise thereof, freedom of assembly. However, there is also a fine line between that and violence and vandalism. I abhor it. And I find it frightening.
Well, the one thing out of all this that just comes front and center with me is, let's say there's this government and they were attacked And their response was tenfold, to kill tenfold number of people. I would oppose that government. I think that's uncalled for. You don't do that.
Yeah,
it frightens
in today's
me just
world.
In general,
one moment.
If you get stopped for an alleged traffic violation, the cop has a billy club, a big flashlight that can be used as a weapon, and a taser.
Let me finish my thought.
A gun.
I get it. Let me finish my thought. I oppose this unnamed government that just killed tenfold the number of people that died in this attack from this other country. But if I oppose that government's policy, that means I hate Jewish people?
No, not at all.
I mean,
that's what tons of people seem to think.
Well, that's the correlation, and that's how they're framing this, that if you oppose the state of
Jewish. Everyone who listens to the show knows I'm very open about that. I love my culture. I love my history. But if I voice opposition over something the Israeli government does, that doesn't mean I'm anti-Semitic or a self-hating Jew.
Right.
It simply means I don't agree with that political policy.
It's being phrased in as that it means you are a self-hating Jew.
And I feel that
you are anti-Semitic.
That term, both of those terms, are just used to silence people anytime they have the quote-unquote wrong opinion.
Right. You're using wrong thought. You must just hate the Jews.
Well,
and it's asinine.
I really appreciate the call from Gigi. Thank you so much for the call. But we're going to go to Sarah from New Mexico. Sarah, you're on Free Talk Live. Chris has missed you. I don't know if you remember Chris being on the show, but I wanted to bring you on to talk today, Sarah. What's on your mind?
Oh, Chris, I think I recognize his voice from...
Oh, it was me and Daryl fielding your phone calls like 5 years ago. You'd call in every night and usually had something to do with traffic, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, you know what? I want to talk about this bridge that I have to go over, and it's
like we never left.
Yeah.
Yeah, the thing is that there's no way you could fit a handicap. It's a ADA non-compliant, and then nobody wants to fix it. You know what
this
I mean?
Bridge?
It's the most pathetic. Yeah, it's a bridge that goes over to over the water arroyo, like a water channel.
Like just a walking
to like
bridge.
Israel?
It's not a bridge that cars drive on, right? It's just a walking bridge?
Well, the cars... There's two car lanes going both ways, and they put a pedestrian walk bridge that's 2.5 feet wide. And if you have a dog, you have to put him like a carrying a little pig over your shoulders.
Yeah.
The dogs won't walk.
That's scary.
I'm still not seeing the problem.
Yeah. Well, it's just like they carry on like this here in Albuquerque and New Mexico. Like this is the way of life here. And I'm
driving.
Trying to bring it up like this is a dumb place. Like they need to widen this bridge, you know, and I've been working on it.
Well, have there actually been people who were saying, hey, I tried to walk on this bridge and I couldn't fit and this needs to be changed? Have there been like disabled people or anything like that attempted to walk on?
Got up and marched. Oops, I can't say that.
That's the whole thing. I don't know who they were. We don't have any committee. We don't have a pedestrian activist organization.
You need to start it. You need to lead this.
Is this bridge the only way to get from point A to point B? Mm,
good question.
That's correct. Unless you want to walk over like another quarter mile, if you have a shopping cart, if you're homeless, you could bring it over that bridge if you want to walk another half a mile or another...
I mean, it's not the only way.
It's not the only way. And a quarter mile is only like, four minutes?
It's not a lot.
Of walking.
More like 10 minutes.
Depends on how handicapped.
I guess that's true.
I have done that rather than walk over this 2.5 bridge and somebody hit me from the back when they're talking and texting and speeding, you know. I mean, I use this walk when I'm facing the traffic because at least I'll get that 1 or 2 second. I could jump out of the way when they're going to hit me.
Jump off the bridge.
The bridge only has a pedestrian walkway on one side?
I think it's got a... pedestrian walkway on both sides.
Okay, you should not be walking with your back to traffic oncoming to you.
Good advice.
Well, has anyone ever driven off that bridge into the water?
No, I haven't heard about it.
But I don't really think they're going to drive onto the sidewalk, right? Like, that would...
I mean, it could happen.
Basically going right
off. But
that's
like saying you could get hit by lightning.
Right. Yeah. Get hit by a bus.
And when those people get in the car every day, they're taking a risk as well that they could be in a car accident. You know, somebody's car could absolutely just like malfunction, for example. It could be no one's
fault. They could be driving
a
Tesla.
And they could die. Yeah.
And it could just explode.
Based on my conversations with you, Sarah, I mean, I cannot imagine walking in Albuquerque. That in itself is taking your own life into your own hands.
That's
such
a good point.
Like,
the drivers there are terrible, right?
Yeah. I've accepted it's like living in Oklahoma with the tornadoes. It's the same living in California with the earthquakes. This is our traffic fatality is the way of life here. But I just feel like I could do something about it. You know what I mean?
Try to make something about it.
Well,
Get out there.
Her
protest.
Activism is talking on Free Talk Live.
Exactly.
She actually said that's her job.
I know that, but it has been for at least the last 5 years.
She's passionate about it.
And
Raymond's all with me about it. And maybe we'll start something, you know? The thing is that we're so computer illiterate. I don't know how to do Zoom. I don't know how to shop on the computer. So that's even
trust me, you're
I
better for it.
Organize anything on the computer. You know what I mean? We have to... So
I don't know if she is better for it because she believes that this MLM she works for, she's saving money by just getting paid in soap to do work for them. But then again, you don't know how to use the computer, so how could you possibly be comparing prices effectively?
The thing is that we get by enough. Like, if we use their credit card, we get 6% and... back in free product dollars, and we're not fussy because otherwise we would buy the product with our money. We'd pay the regular price, just get it for free, so it doesn't make much difference to us.
Making money through soap.
Well, her money all just comes from welfare, so it like doesn't matter as much to her because she doesn't have to work for it. Thank you for the call, Sarah.
Good to hear from you.
It's Free Talk Live. More coming up. 603-283-6160 is the phone number. It's Free Talk Live. More coming up. Phone number here, that's 603-283-6160. Are you tired of the oppressive rules and moderation of the big tech social media sites? Our Mastodon server at social.freetalklive.com can set you free. Mastodon is free, open source, decentralized, and federated. Multiple apps are available for iOS, Android, Windows, Mac, and Linux. social.freetalklive.com. And with you on the show tonight, you've got me, Bonnie,
Lori,
and Chris.
And we have this story to bring to you guys tonight that it seems pretty hilarious to me. Apparently, FBI agents are spending all day harassing people on Facebook.
Thank God.
This is from Reason.com. Yeah. Reason.com. FBI agent says he hassles people every day, all day long over Facebook posts. It's just an effort to keep everybody safe and make sure nobody has any ill will, he claimed.
I can't believe he actually says that. I'm not even going to say he actually believes it because he probably doesn't.
No, I'm sure he doesn't.
That's a ridiculous thing to say right after saying you spend all day long harassing people on Facebook. It's an effort to keep people safe.
The FBI spends every day, all day long, interrogating people over their Facebook posts. At least that's what agents told Stillwater, Oklahoma resident Rola Abdeljawad when they showed up at her house to ask her about her social media activity. Three FBI agents came to Abdeljawad's house and said that they had been given screenshots of her posts by Facebook. Her lawyer, Hassan Shibli, posted a video of the incident online Wednesday. Abdeljawad, they're going to make me keep saying that. I hope I'm saying it right. told agents that she didn't want to talk and asked them to show their badges on camera, which the agents refused to do. She wrote on Facebook that she later confirmed with local police that the FBI agents really were FBI agents. Facebook gave us a couple of screenshots of your account, one agent in a gray shirt said in the video.
Well,
So we no longer live in a free country and we can't say what we want, replied Abdeljawad. No, we totally do. That's why we're not here to arrest you or anything, a second agent in a red shirt added.
How nice. How kind.
We do this every day, all day long. It's just an effort to keep everybody safe and make sure nobody has any ill will.
I believe that they do it all day long. I really think that a lot of like the completely anonymous trolls on my Twitter and stuff are just feds. Yeah. They're not AI.
My husband says whenever there's like some big fight discussion in a Facebook group, he says those people are all just arguing with bots and feds.
Probably pretty accurate.
Yeah.
I totally believe that. Did it say like specifically what kind of posts she makes that they found troubling or like worth interviewing her over?
It didn't say yet, but it might further down. I just can't imagine if FBI agents knocked on my door and were like, we'd like to speak to you about your Facebook post. I don't know if I could stop myself from laughing. Like, are you for real right now? Is this a serious conversation we're about to have about a Facebook post?
Yeah.
Facebook is barely even anything anymore.
And saying, you say, well, don't we live in a free country? And they say, yeah, no, we totally do. Then stop, like, wasting 1 second of my time.
Yeah, I'd be like, okay, cool. My door. Bye.
Yeah, seriously. Have a good day.
Yeah. Shibley says that he doesn't know which Facebook post caught the attention of the agents and that it was the first time he had heard Facebook's parent company, Meta, preemptively reporting posts to law enforcement. Andy Stone, a spokesman for Meta, and Kayla McCleary, a spokeswoman for the FBI's Oklahoma City office, declined to comment. Meta's official policy is to hand over Facebook data to U.S. law enforcement in response to a court order, a subpoena, a search warrant, or an emergency situation involving imminent harm to a child or risk of death or serious physical injury to any person. The company received 73,956 requests from U.S. law enforcement and handed over data 87.84% of the time in the first half of 2023, according to the Meta website.
Wow.
In 6 months, they got 73,956 requests to hand over data.
Wow. And you know what's crazy? There have been people who scammed different Google and YouTube and stuff like that by, they weren't the FBI. They just sent a request that looked like a request and got information that way. Because they're just like, they get so many requests, they're like, oh, here's another one, send. And here I'm going to send out the people's passwords or whatever the information is that the scammer is asking them for. Because it's kind of the FBI's fault that those people got scammed because they are requesting it so often and probably not like doing a very secure like process for it too.
Yeah, I highly doubt that there's 73,956,000 things posted on Facebook in 6 months that warrant an FBI response.
Yeah, that are warranted at all, but also that are so important that it's like, wow, we just have to, break due process. We have to, spy on people because it's that big of a deal. Like somebody saying like, oh, I am about to do something bad. I don't want to say it.
Do you think there are that many anti-government posts on Facebook in a minute?
In a minute? No,
At least my friends. I mean, it's a constant stream of, what are we doing? What's wrong with this country? And this is left and right again. But I think like the FBI would investigate those. You said something against the United States.
Is that not allowed anymore?
Where have you been?
Oh, I was under the impression that we had free speech.
I know, but I've no longer have that disillusion. It's insane. And I think the bar to raise to FBI interest and FBI involvement is so low.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Joe Biden sucks.
Yeah.
That's enough.
Knock, knock, knock.
That's, excuse me, sir. We need to talk to you about
your
Facebook.
How dare you say such things?
Joe Biden sucks.
Well, I know. It's so outrageous because he is the greatest president we've ever had.
Good job.
Thank you.
Abdeljawad's Facebook timeline is public, so the FBI agents could have found it themselves. For the past week, she has made multiple angry posts per day about the war in Gaza, referring to Israel as Israel, but none of her posts on her feed call for violence. Ironically, Abdeljawad had also posted a warning about exactly the kind of government monitoring she was later subjected to. Don't fall for their games. Our community is being watched, and they are just waiting for any reason to round us up, Abdeljawad wrote. If you're Muslim and or pro pro-Palestine. Consider all your media accounts, Google searches, mail, messenger, local mosques, and political events monitored.
If you're anyone.
If you're anyone. Yeah.
But I am happy when things like this happen that, I mean, I'm not really happy that it's happening, but it's kind of a good thing when things like this happen to wake up a whole group.
Yeah. Silver lining.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like Muslims do consider that if you're openly against the genocide in Israel, that you may be getting targeted. Like, this woman's kind of proof of that.
If you're against anything that the government does, you're opening yourself up to being targeted.
And Israel's the government's little pet best friend ally right now, and you can't say anything wrong against them.
It's not even just right now.
Yeah.
They've been allies since, like, Reagan. Was it Reagan?
Well,
or before that?
Even
Nixon?
Before that. No, no,
no. I just figured they were
always allies. It's been a long
time. Since 1947?
Is that when they came out? When Israel was, like, created?
Yeah, I think since then. I mean, we've had a pro-Zionist foreign policy towards the Middle East. And
yeah,
they come right out and say it. Joe Biden said, you don't have to be there to be a Zionist. I'm a Zionist.
Like, really?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah, they just come right out and say it. They go and they kiss the wall and claim that,
like,
Jerusalem is the capital of
Israel.
Israel. And,
yeah. And that belongs to the Jews.
Yep. There, that was from the greatest president we've ever had.
Joe Biden?
Joe Biden.
Yeah, they all say it. Trump went and did the same thing. Wow. Like, they all say it. That's part of their script when they get there.
That's crazy.
To the White House.
And people do always say, like, oh, this has always been a Christian nation, and Christians, like, are by definition Zionists because they believe it's a sin to do anything, like, quote unquote, against Israel.
Mm-hmm. Well, because they think that it's going to fulfill the prophecy. If Israel can fulfill the prophecy, then the Messiah will come back.
Yeah.
So being a Christian nation, because separation of church and state and all that, they, you know, that's what a lot of the pro-Israel alliance is based on, is heavily Christian dominated reigning government.
Yep.
But didn't they kill him the first time?
Yeah, but only, like, kinda, and then he came back, and then he, like, flew into the sky, and then he's gonna come back again.
No harm, no foul.
Yeah. Chosen people, or they're still chosen people. That's one reason I like Swedenborgians. They are Christians that don't believe that Jesus is literally coming back. And I'll see, like, videos by Swedenborgians that are like, don't support the war on Gaza, please. It's not fulfilling some kind of prophecy. And I think it's, like, really interesting that a Christian group would come out and say that. I don't know. Disclaimer. I like them. And I just find it pretty, like, it's just so anti-common sense to believe that a God would support genocide.
I kind of find it insane that people are like, I would love for Jesus to come back and all the people I know to be dematerialized and have hellfire rain down upon them and die in the most horrible ways ever imaginable, because
it'd be great
because they did a bad thing. Yeah, it's gonna be awesome.
Or because they didn't
I'm gonna be fine.
The truth. They could be really good people, but they didn't accept what they believe is the truth about the universe.
I've lived my whole life perfectly, and I'm gonna be fine, and I'm gonna go to heaven, but everyone else around me is gonna die terribly.
Well, really, I think that they did live their life perfectly, but they believe that it doesn't matter because they can just like lay in their bed at night and say, like, Jesus, I'm sorry to you, not the person I harm, but to you.
Yeah.
And then
is that every
all forgiven?
Is that all the Christian religious? I grew up Catholic, so I know that they do that. They're just like,
yeah.
Oh, sorry. I killed somebody. Can I just go say some Hail Marys and then we're good?
Well, then again,
plenary indulgence.
Yeah.
Some are all about work too. I can't remember which ones. Maybe the Puritans or the Protestants or something like that. They believe, like, you got to apologize and then work.
That's
for
the
God.
Catholics.
Oh, that's the Catholics.
Yeah, you got to do your penance.
Hmm.
You have to say it in the pew and, like, do seven Hail Marys and, like, four Our Fathers.
That's about.
Yep.
They make it a punishment on purpose. I was so bored the only time I ever went to a Catholic mass for a funeral. Well, I don't know if that's the same thing as mass.
Yeah, you go into the little
group.
You go into the little box with the priest and you tell him all the bad things you did, and then he tells you how many prays to do.
Final mass. It's you defeat the last boss of Hail Marys and they let you go. Yeah, they have the dead body in the room and they, like, pray over it. It's really weird. It was kind of, like, weirdly nice. Like, it was like a 3-day funeral. I just thought that I was like, wow, you have the dead body in the room and you pray for him like he's right there, and then they let him go. That's what they think.
All religions are weird.
Yeah, that's strange.
Like the Mormons, they baptize people against their will.
Yeah, dead people.
Dead people against their will, like, you know. Yeah. Got to make sure that everybody's safe.
Make sure they get to the right place, because mm-hmm. God wouldn't just like,
like,
you know.
And I don't understand the Whoops. Jehovah's Witnesses, like, they only let so many people in, but we're going to keep trying to get more people so that it lowers my chances of going to heaven. Yeah. Like, what is that?
And it's a small number. I don't remember what it is right now. Do you?
44,000, I think.
Whoa. They think that only 44,000 people will go to heaven. That's really bad.
Maybe it's 144,000. Something like that.
Oh, Riley says maybe 144. I've only ever known one Jehovah's Witness, or maybe like two, but they're really a strange one too. They don't believe in celebrating birthdays and holidays. They don't believe in blood transfusions. They will actually die instead of get one. And lots of other like medical interventions.
Yeah, they don't celebrate anything other than Jesus.
That's why. Okay.
Yeah, it's 144,000. You're right.
Wow, good job, Riley. Yeah. Good memory.
Yep.
Yeah, so I don't remember how we really got onto that, except, well, if your religion and what you believe to be right, regardless of, you know, what, like, natural law, like, just, like, don't harm people, don't take their stuff, if whatever you believe becomes the next target of what, you know, the government thinks is in their way for their allies or whatever, then just know that it doesn't matter that it's your religion and we're supposed to have freedom of religion here. You will be their next target. They will infringe on your rights to privacy and things like that.
Mm-hmm. They'll just say that you're the enemy and make everyone think that you're the enemy and do things to make it look like you're the enemy, and then you'll become the enemy.
Yeah.
They'll work with the mass media. I remember I didn't really know which way they were going to go with the Israel-Gaza argument. I just didn't know, but all mass media was like in lockstep, like really pro-Israel at
oh,
first.
Yeah.
And that was weird.
Yeah, they're like bound together.
And this is interesting because you have this concerted effort. I mean, from the U.S. government, from all the media companies. I mean, we expect this. But you have a whole lot of people that were kind of swayed by, I don't know, 34,000 dead Palestinians. People did wake up and they did start to ask questions, and that's good. And people that were, I mean, previously, I think a lot of them were previously pro-Zionist just because they didn't really know why.
But now,
other than we hear it all the time, we're supposed to be that way.
Now those people who are waking up are being
targeted
as the enemies.
Of course.
They're saying they're racist, they're violent, they're this, they're silencing them. They can't have protests. I watched a video today of a cameraman walking with protesters on a campus, and the cops threw him and his camera to the ground and then charged him with assaulting a police officer.
What?
Yeah.
Well, lots of the times I think that whenever there are these protests that they start to change people's minds and get enough attention, they start to put people in there that are just going to go be bad actors, not saying even like that story
right.
has. Like, they're going to start putting people in that are going to start starting buildings on fire and actually assaulting people.
Yeah, they put undercover officers and stuff.
To make
you can see their vests under their shirts sometimes.
Well.
Yeah.
It's just a regular flag. It's not a false flag.
This is my casual flak jacket that I'm wearing underneath here.
I always wear this.
Yes.
They wear like hoodies in not very cold weather, and like all the same tennis shoes or all the same boots and all the same jeans.
Yeah, they all have their cop boots.
Yeah, cop boots. Yep. They do. Well,
jack boots.
I just thought that it was interesting that we have a story, and I don't know if you have the other one. We had a story about the FBI hassling people on Facebook all day, but we also have, you know, the other thing that you could be arguing with. You might be arguing, if you're arguing on Facebook with an FBI agent, you might be arguing with a bot. So do you have that story as well?
I don't, but I could probably find it real quick.
Oh, sorry. Well,
no, that's okay.
I could also probably find it, but I thought this story was really interesting because people often say, like, when you're getting in an argument, you were saying that your husband says this, that, oh, you're just arguing with some bots or some FBI agents on there. You're not changing it, like, people's hearts and minds.
Okay, so this is globalnews.ca. It says, Meta says you can't turn off its new AI tool on Facebook or Instagram.
Why would you want to?
Oh, yeah, it's helpful.
Right.
Meta has now integrated AI into Instagram, Facebook, WhatsApp, and Messenger in Canada, but its presence may not be welcomed by all. It's here, too, now, not just Canada. As the new feature cannot be turned off. In a statement Thursday, the company said Meta AI can be used to get things done, learn, create, and connect with the things that matter to you. What if privacy matters to you?
Anything but that.
Yeah, anything but that.
Sorry about that.
Yeah. Human rights.
Little disclaimer.
It's now available in Canada, Australia, Ghana, Jamaica, Malawi, New Zealand, Nigeria, Pakistan, Singapore, South Africa, Uganda, Zambia, and Zimbabwe.
But Bam you're King. Saying like this is like dated, so now it's also in the United States?
I mean, if you go on Facebook and you try to like type something, it has the AI right there at the top bar, and you can't shut it off, you can't block it.
And when you go to search in Facebook or Meta products, now it's you're searching with AI.
Yeah, you're searching with AI, and it says like, ask questions, like it gives you a prompt. Ask questions like, where can I find a good restaurant? I already have Google.
Yeah.
What do I need that for? Or any other search engine.
I have Google's AI. Why do I need your AI?
What do I need your AI for?
Are they owned by
my
the same
Samsung
people,
AI. I mean, they're all owned by the same guy eventually.
Yeah, basically.
Right. At the very tippity top.
Like
right?
Disney owns basically everything.
It's basically the government.
I just found out today, like, it's so weird how things are owned by other things. I found out today that Mars, like the chocolate company, owns Banfield Pet Hospital, like that's in Petco's and stuff.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That's so weird.
That is so weird. And you know, that crap really scares me too, because like, I already know how they're trying to ruin our health, like humans' health. And I'm always wondering, like, what are they doing to try to ruin my dog's health as well? Like, they just want you stressed out and unhappy. Like, they would love for your dog to die.
It's weird that the chocolate company, which is poisonous to dogs, has animal hospitals.
Exactly.
Like, I switched my dog's food just a couple years ago, because I started realizing, like, it wasn't until I started, like, really learning about different ingredients and stuff that I thought about the fact that, like, I don't really know what, I've never looked at the ingredients on my dog's food. I looked at it, like, number three is sunflower seed oil. Dogs don't need that.
No.
So,
yeah, all those dogs frolicking through the sunflower fields.
That happens all the time.
And, like, to make sunflower seed oil, you need, like, thousands of seeds, like, something a dog will never encounter in nature.
I was outside the other day and heard my bird feeder fall over. Dogs.
Dogs.
So they're
again.
Eating sunflowers. Dogs again.
Damn dogs.
Thousands and thousands of seeds lost.
All kinds of pissed off air birds all over the world going, what's happening to our feed? Dogs.
I really believe that they're trying to harm your dog's health as well, and it kind of scares me, and I'm starting to think about, maybe I shouldn't say this, starting to think about like photoshopping my dog's like vet records to say that he got vaccinated. I don't really know if I should or not. It's like really complicated, because I know some vaccines are helpful and stuff, but then they all like put crap as secondary ingredients in them too.
Some things are silly, like coconut is indoors unless he's with you, right? So why does he need a rabies shot? If you don't need a rabies shot, then why does coconut need a rabies shot?
Yeah.
If you're both in here, not outside, like, fighting raccoons.
Are you making the argument for Bonnie to get a rabies shot? Is that what
I'm making the argument for coconut not to get one.
Okay.
Yeah. Nobody get a rabies shot unless it's necessary.
Okay. And they make you, if you want to go get your dog like groomed, they make you prove that he has rabies, Bordetella, maybe another one. But it's just like, I don't ever board him, and you could just keep him separate from other dogs. I don't know. He's just getting his haircut.
There should be exemptions for dogs for their vaccines.
Yeah, there should be religious exemptions.
How come people don't, like, do you have to get your cat shots?
Probably for, like, if you got your cat groomed or something.
But people let their cats just roam outside.
Yeah.
So shouldn't they need more shots?
I don't know. I have never owned a cat as an adult, at least.
To me, it should be between the groomer and the cat's owner.
Yeah.
Just that's the end of it.
Right.
And if you're fine working on this questionable feline who's likely going to scratch the heck out of you.
Yeah.
And I'll pay you.
And the thing is, like, I understand the idea of vaccines. I'm just afraid that they have taken, like, they just take everything that seems like, oh, I understand the idea of that, and they make it trash that kills you. Like, I don't want to inject mercury into,
like,
my dog.
Like the Gardasil shot. That was the HPV shot that, like, just messed tons of people up.
Yeah.
They were like, here, take this so you don't get cancer. Oh, whoops, you got cancer.
Yeah.
We gave it to you. Yeah. Sorry about that.
Sorry.
Maybe I don't know about, maybe I shouldn't admit it on the air, but it's too late. I always tell doctors, every time I go see a new doctor, they're like, oh, and so have you gotten your Gardasil shot? And I'm always like, yep. And they're like, yeah, you probably got that around 14. they don't ask for, like, proof or anything. I just always tell them I got it.
Yeah. They ask me if I have my COVID shot, and I'm like, no.
Oh, yeah. COVID, I would just tell them no. But Gardasil, like, they will harass you more, I think, than the COVID shot. And I don't think the...
It doesn't even make any sense why they would harass you. If you were no, I didn't get it, and I don't plan on getting it. I'm married and in a committed relationship and have no reason to get this, and also don't want cancer from a shot.
Yeah. Some people, have told me about their experience, telling them that they don't want the Gardasil shot and that they treat people a lot like they treated people about the COVID shot. But they've always done this, since before COVID-19. That's one thing that they really will fight you over. It's like, I don't know. Doctors don't have anything to do with, scientists. All doctors are people who have been given a bunch of, brainwashing from PR companies. Doctors will just repeat stuff that the public believes as well. They don't go and make do experiments, and they don't have time to. I don't even think most of them have time to be up to date on the current science in journals coming out. How could you possibly have time for that?
I had a recent health struggle, and when I went to my doctor, I actually found some articles in peer-reviewed studies and brought them to her and was like, hey, can we try this? And she's like, well, I mean, this is pretty, it's pretty safe, so go ahead. She's never seen the study before. She had no idea that it even existed, but she was like, there's no harm, so do it.
So by that argument, are you suggesting we just don't trust any doctor for anything, or?
I think that you should use critical thinking skills and also be your own advocate, but don't just throw anything about your life into someone else's hands blindly.
One thing I think is you'll always need them for surgeries and emergency care a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. But one thing I think is people need to stop going to the doctor when they feel fine.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think it's important to always, you retain control over your body. Mm-hmm. This is your body, not theirs. So seek help, but you're responsible for it.
You can get your own medical tests done at a lab.
And a lot of time you just really have to stand up for yourself against those people because they have opinions. So this has been Free Talk Live. Thank you for listening. I really think we need to all continue to say Free Roger, Free Roger Veer. And you can go to freetalklive.com for more. Thanks for listening. Peace.
This is Mark Edge with Free Talk Live. Mark Warden with PorcupineRealEstate.com is one of the best real estate agents I've ever worked with. I've been through about 24 real estate transactions in my life, and I feel like I know what I'm doing, but there's always the things that you don't know that you don't know. Mark Warden with PorcupineRealEstate.com found a problem with the house that I was buying that ultimately saved me $65,000. He's a consummate professional, holds his people to his own high standards, and I would unequivocally recommend him for any real estate purchase in New Hampshire. Don't sell yourself short. Contact PorcupineRealEstate.com.